I'm quoting him. He said, "Tony, I'm going to rape your wife. I'm going to rape all of your grandchildren." And he said, "The next time you go out of town, I'm going to kill them. And what the F are you going to do about it?" End quote. This has gone on for years now. Behind me are several witnesses who can attest to what was said. They have video. They have made numerous complaints to the police and the sheriff's department.
The key here is he throws at least five punches, one of them connecting with his right temple, bloodying the pastor before the pastor then engages him in defense. But, of course, the pastor was arrested and put out on $25,000 a month. And it's an example that the public is ready and the public is angry for people to start defending themselves, not just culturally, but physically. We're not calling for offensive violence. We are calling for men to stand up. Pastor Tony Spell, thanks for being here with us.
If you were to get a cursory study of this book of 1,189 chapters, 66 books, and 31,102 verses, you will find out that good always wins over evil. The more they afflict us, the more we multiply and grow. You meant evil, but God meant good. Psalm 82 and 3, defraud not one another. Defend the poor and the needy. Come to the aid of the defenseless and the helpless. So what's happening in our society, Alex, is we're in the fourth turning. December of 1773, the Boston Tea Party sowed the seeds for the first turning. That's the Great American Revolution. Count 80 years to the beginning of the American Civil War. President James Buchanan would not make a ruling on the Dred Scott case. South Carolina secedes. You have the beginning of the American Uncivil War. Several hundred thousand brothers against brothers, fathers against sons. You go another 80 years. We go to Black Tuesday, October 25th, 1929, the crash of the stock market. Sow the seeds for the Second World War. We're now in the fourth turning, Alex. No nation has ever survived four turnings. But what's happening is, instead of this turning and the great unraveling of society, politically we're corrupt, religiously we're corrupt, financially we're corrupt. We have all these problems in our society. So the mystery of iniquity, which means the sin of lawlessness, is at work in our society. Only he who now letteth will let until we're taken out of the way. So what wants to happen in society is the Lord says, I want you to beat your swords into plowshares. I want you to turn your spears into pruning hooks. But before we get there, before we get to the book of Isaiah chapter 2 and 4, what we have is Isaiah 59 and 14. Judgment is backwards. Truth is fallen in the streets. Equity cannot enter in. If you would depart evil, you are condemned for that. So something is backfiring in this. We're at an inflection point in our nation, Alex. We're at a flash point in our nation. So the more the news tries to control the narrative between this man and myself, the more they crop the videos and try to create this George Floyd moment. We want the beginning of the videos that led up to the altercation that they're not releasing. They're not giving, you know, the domestic terrorism. They're not giving the intimidation and threat of bodily harm, of sexual abuse toward minors and children. We don't have just a right to defend ourselves. We have a duty and an obligation to defend ourselves. We are those voices that stand up for the poor and for the needy. Defend the defenseless. Provide for the common good.
I'm not calling for offensive violence, but I am calling for men and women and everyone to get trained, get prepared, to defend yourselves, because we're going into the fourth turning and a whole collapse of the old system, the rebirth of the new. The globals are trying to bring in their AI tyranny. That is going to fail. All things the devil set up in the end gobbles turn around and use for good.
His name?
This is an emergency transmission from FEMA Region 6 in occupied North America.
There is a war. It's happening now. It will decide the fate of humanity. The time has come to choose sides. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance. Share the links now at Alex Jones Live.
Now in the 21st century, it's time to stand up and realize that we should not allow ourselves to be crammed into this rat maze. We should not submit to dehumanization. The 21st century is going to be a new century. Not the century of slavery, not the century of lies, issues of no significance, and classism, and statism, and all the rest of those in control. It's going to be the age of humankind standing up for something pure, something right.
I have sworn upon the altar of God eternal hostility against every form of tyranny over the mind of man.
I want freedom! That's what I want! And that's what you should want!
You're listening to Alex Jones.
The truth is out there in front of you, but they lay out this buffet of lies. I'm sick of it, and I'm not going to take a bite out of it!
AlexJonesLive.com. Tomorrow's news today.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. And look, I already had an appointment. I was already going to do this. So it's a complete coincidence. I know what people are thinking. They're thinking you saw Owen Schroyer's new look and you had to have it for yourself. It's a coincidence, I swear. I was going to do this anyway. I thought it was time for a new look. I thought it was time for a new style. I kind of like it, I gotta say. I could be in a rock band. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to War Room Live. If you're uncertain about why exactly I look so beautiful right now, you must not be on X. It's the biggest story. It remains the biggest story across X, for the last few days. It, of course, is the makeover of one Owen Schroyer. Here's the thing. People are looking at it. They're saying, Owen, what have you done? What have you done? You were such a handsome young man. Why did you dye your hair like this? On the other hand, he's been at the top of the trending for the last 2 days. Is he a marketing genius? We don't know. It could be. That very well could be it. Here's the problem, though. Here's the issue when you're doing a stunt for marketing. I assume that's what it was. You don't want the stunt to overshadow the thing you're saying. So what happened is, I guess Owen dyed his hair gold, blonde, even more blonde. I thought he was blonde already, but I guess he's more blonde now. This sucks, man. How do you people do this? How do you have long hair? It's getting everywhere. It's beautiful, but it's inconvenient. It's also not beautiful, but it's very inconvenient. But he's been blonde for a few days, but he makes a video where I guess he's criticizing MAGA voters. And it goes totally viral, and everybody's posted. They're saying TDS. They're saying he looks like, you know, that Kathy woman, whatever her name is, Kathy Griffin. I saw this. I've seen a bunch of posts of it. Never actually watched the video. I'm not actually even sure what he said in the video. See, this is where the calculation breaks down. You don't want the stunt you're doing to cause so much scandal and conversation that they don't even listen to what you say in the video. So I think that's what's happened here. Personally, I kind of like it. I'm kind of into it. I don't know. I don't know what's going on. But honestly, I'm for it. I like going mixing things up a little bit. Dyeing his hair. Trying a new look out. That's how you become the next Rush Limbaugh, I'm pretty sure. All right, we'll be serious. We'll get to the news. We'll actually do it. Would you take me more seriously if I look like... I mean, I look like I'm from Agartha. I mean, this is my Agarthan version, my Agarthan form. This is my Hyperborean counter identity. My secret identity is a Hyperborean prince. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the news. I think I could do it. I think I could pull it off. I think I could be president. I think this is the look I need. My fellow Americans, today we stand on the threshold of greatness. I think it would work. Could I pull it up into a ponytail? Okay, all right. We'll get serious. We'll get to the actual news. Just having a little fun here. Lots of people are portraying themselves in blonde wigs in solidarity with Owen Schroyer. I saw Alex Stein post something. It's pretty funny. Other people saying this is a cry for help. It's a mental breakdown he's having. I think everybody's taking it a little bit too seriously. Harrison Smith, in the way I was meant to be. I was blonde when I was a kid, you know. I grew out of it. All right. We do have a lot. Okay. All right. I'll take it off. Hey, look. If Alex gets to do a Hitler mustache, I get to do a blonde wig, okay? You gotta give me that, if nothing else. All right, where do I put this? This is a nice wig, too. This is fancy. I'm gonna give it to my wife. All right. You cannot have it. Sorry, one of the crew members that's not as blessed as some of us haired individuals. I'm trying to figure out how. No, you may not have the wig. The wig is going into storage for the next time I need it. All right. We got a lot of videos. We got a lot of articles to get to. But to be honest with you, it's like it's not actually, the fact that for the last 2 days, at least for me, the number one trending topic on Twitter has been MAGA reacts to Owen Schroyer's new look. It represents a distinct lack of real news to actually be talking about. It means it's kind of a slow news day, couple of days. It's been a little bit slow, but we're going to tell you about what's actually going on. There is, of course, a lot of news happening these days, and we'll get into all of it. But honestly, I was running around trying to find a wig all this morning, so I mean, I don't even know what's happening. I don't even know what's happening. Kidding, of course. There's a lot of discussion about flock cameras we'll get into today. We're going to talk about the struggle that American politics is having with Israel right now. It's a problem everybody is facing, and it's a problem that is it's like the proto problem. It's like the problem that begets problems. It's the problem that stops us from solving other problems. It's the problem that takes so many resources, so much effort, that it denies those things to the real problems. It's the problem of problems, Israel. And here's a very simple way that this breaks down is Israel continues to, and literally every day, there is no day in which I do not see another video with another exploration of yet another Israeli crime against humanity, massacre of unspeakable horror, just on and on. 2 minutes before the show, I'm, you know, flipping through videos on X, and you get to one about a doctor in Gaza digging up a mass grave and finding a bunch of children with their hands tied behind their backs and their mouths filled with dirt, meaning they literally had their hands tied behind their back and were buried alive. So you see, there's repeated examples, daily, practically examples of Israel just behaving in the most heinous, despicable, violent, savage, brutal way you can possibly imagine. And it never ends. And they do it all with the permission of and only because they have the support of the United States of America. People in America don't like that. We just don't. We don't like being the subject to this tiny foreign nation. We don't like that tiny foreign nation seems to despise us. And if we don't do what they want, threatens to destroy us, that they're carrying out these massacres against innocent people, that just everything that you could say about Israel, like it's just an awful albatross around our neck. It is a poison that is now thoroughly integrated into our bloodstream and suspicable. The reason I'm saying all of this is because this is how a lot of Americans feel, and they feel very strongly about it, and it serves, and it's interesting because it's almost like any political perspective that you have, Israel can serve as like an avatar of that outrage. If you are a leftist and you hate white people and think that white supremacy is the most evil thing in the world, guess what? You're going to see Israel as white supremacists. Even though They are the diametrically opposed polar opposite of white supremacy or the Nazis. That doesn't matter. You're able to see it as that. You're able to see it as being tied in with the big corporations. If that's your big beef, if your big beef is like whatever it is, Israel can serve as an avatar for it. And it's not entirely inaccurate when that's the case. So you've got a huge, huge portion of Americans who are so outraged by this and who see this as such a betrayal of our fundamental values that it is in a lot of ways the only thing that really matters. Because again, it can be an avatar for everything else. So it's like, as a democratic socialist, as a left winger, you're going to look at two candidates, one that's a normal Democrat and one that's a progressive anti-Israel Democrat. And you're going to say that corporate Democrat, that more mainstream Democrat, the fact that they won't speak out against Israel proves to me that they're insincere, proves to me that they don't believe what they say, that they are captured by corporate interests, that they're secretly on the side of the imperialistic pigs, that they're a white supremacist, whatever it is. And the other person, even though I don't know anything about them, the fact that they're anti-Israel means at least they are less controlled than the pro-Israel person. This is the mindset. This is the decision-making process that's been leading to the victories of the socialists throughout the country. So people are looking around and they want to make their vote a protest vote against Israel. And again, this can be because of Epstein. This can be because of the Iran war, any number of reasons. The left embraces their radical edge. They give credence to and basically protect from criticism the more fringe elements of their movement. So they actually have the option. So when Democrats go to the polls, if they want to vote against Israel, they vote for the socialist. They vote for the communist. They vote for the DSA or one of their cohort. When the Republicans want to vote against Israel, unfortunately, the Jewish oligarchs that run the Republican Party have spent the last 2 years systematically eliminating even the slightest hint of anti-Israel sentiment from the Republican Party. So Republicans who want to vote against Israel have nobody to vote for. So if they're not hardline party ideologues, they're going to vote for the Democrats. So we have no option. So allowing Israel to take over the Republican Party and purge any of their opposition from the Republican Party has left Republicans at a distinct disadvantage. This would be strategically retarded if, in fact, the people now currently around Trump and running the Republican Party were, in fact, Republicans or conservative in any way. The big secret behind all of this is that all of the big tech Jewish billionaires that have hijacked Trump's administration at this point, including Miriam Adelson, you know, the Palantir crew, like, they all universally are Democrats, are lifelong Democrats. Their belief system hasn't changed from being Democrats. So what do you think their response would be if you go up to them and you say, you know, you're destroying the Republican Party? Do you think they care? They don't like they are not Republicans. They're Democrats. So by taking over the Republican Party and using it as a vehicle to so humiliate Trump and disadvantage America, they're driving people into the Democratic Party, which may have been their plan the entire time, because they're Democrats, because they want people to vote for Democrats. They're not Republicans. They just took over the Republican Party because they could see that that was the most beneficial thing they could do for the state of Israel. This is all, like, right now I've got video after video of people, whether it's Ben Shapiro or anybody else, bemoaning the fact that Republicans, you know, won't vote for Israel firsters, or that the, you know, DSA communists are taking over. It's Israel. It's your fault. It's all your fault. This is all your fault. So I don't know what else to tell you. Like, I think they realize, I think they know it. I think they have to. I don't understand. It just, I don't know. These people are living in a fantasy world. And the more I look into it, the more I'm convinced 90% of the people out there acting like they don't know what's going on. They all just know exactly what's going on. There's no way they don't. And for some reason, they've decided that faking ignorance about the reality of what's going on is the best strategy. I can't imagine how it could possibly be. Let's go to, we've got Dana Lash here, breaking down the foreign psyop that's taken over Podcastistan, pushing Israel to the litmus test to divide Republicans. This is the most frustrating thing ever, because it is just so obviously literally the opposite. Israel has taken over the Republican Party, turned it entirely towards their interests, and forced this division on all of us. It could not be more obvious. They're still trying to like blame Qatar for any of this. And it is a ubiquitous thing. I know I've talked about it a bunch before, but it never stops coming up. The fact that the pro-Israel side does not have an argument. They cannot contend on the basis of facts. They cannot sell their point of view through language. They just can't do it, which is why the number one threat to freedom of speech is coming from the Jewish lobby right now, bar none, more than anybody else. And it's happening internationally, obviously, and they brag about it. So take it up with them. I got videos of that too, right? I mean, they're pretty open about the fact that they are trying to silence everybody because they can't argue. It's the same reason the left censored everybody for the last couple of years. They can't argue, they can't win, so they have to try to silence you or threaten you or come up with some ulterior motive that you have for telling the truth. You don't need an ulterior motive to tell the truth. You don't need an ulterior motive to say what's actually happening. It's only the people who are lying who need to, you know, have an ulterior motive to do so. And time again, and it's kind of frustrating, but it's also, I really don't know how to feel about it, but like, cause really what I feel is like, man, you guys, like this is evidence of your loss. So I post something that's just true, maybe a little exaggerated, but also totally true. It's negative about Israel or anything else. And the comments on my ex are just nothing but insults. And it's like, I don't know if you think this is convincing or what, like, I don't know what the strategy is, but it just represents a total lack of intellectual seriousness or competence whatsoever. That I'll post something about like, well, the founding of Israel, all the founders were a bunch of, communist terrorists that tried to overthrow the Russian government in 1905, got kicked out for their troubles, you know, went to Israel and tried it there. You know, it's like, that's just what happened. That's just what the facts of history are. And then every comment underneath is like, I didn't know you were gay. It's like, what are we talking about here? What are we talking about here? So they're here in this clip of Dana Lash, whatever her name is, you see the same thing where it's, they really can't even acknowledge that any objection you might have could be in any way valid. They have to try to discredit your motive. That means they're losing the argument. That means they don't have anything to actually say. Here's this Dana woman, trying to psychoanalyze why people could possibly be against a genocidal little, you know, state of assassins in the Middle East. But they must be getting money. Let's watch.
This is what's happening on the right, too, by the way. It's mostly an online phenomenon, but more and more it's carrying over into reality. I had a story where, let me pull this up. It was an Axios poll, and it was more and more, it says the Republican Party from Axios is starting to turn on Israel. And it gets into this, everything that Podcastistan talks about, right, which is kind of the goal, It's the goal of it, right? That was the whole goal of the podcast to stand movement. It is a red-green alliance, and I think that the people...
Let's pause right there. So, okay, the term podcast to stand, the whole podcast to stand movement, this is obviously an attempt to, you know, discredit people with podcasts because they're threatened by people with podcasts, you understand? Fox News, CNN, they are all changing their programming to be more like podcasts because they're losing the popularity contest to podcasts. So they need to try to discredit podcasts as if because you haven't been approved of by a collection of producers and executives that all, by the way, just so happen to be dual citizens with Israel, but they're patriotic Americans and they have to approve of you. And only then will you, you know, be worthy of our consideration. Only when you're Mark Levin, you know, pudgy idiot speaking to nobody on a channel that, you know, people only watch if they lost the remote at the old folks' home. He's the one in charge. He's the responsible one, not these podcasters, she says, on a podcast that's not as popular as ours. And then Podcastistan, as if Islam has anything to do with my personal, righteous, purely American opposition to the despicable, incomprehensible, retarded, vicious, small-minded, vengeance-driven mindset of the Israelis. The pathetic collective punishment smallness. That's the only way I can describe it. Spiritually small, spiritually pathetic, groveling, deceiving, devious. See, I think a lot of these things are true about the Muslims as well, but we're talking about Israel right now. We're talking about my opposition to it, how it comes from a pure and righteous 100% American standpoint that has nothing to do with Islam. See, they can't actually tell me that I'm wrong about that. I mean, they do. They lie like they breathe. It's amazing. So they'll lie to me and say, well, you're wrong about that. There's no way that this is, but that's the only, they can't actually confront the things we have proof for and explain why they're justified. And it's not like there's just one. It's not like, well, there was one UN report that they can try to discredit and that's it. It's like there's 100 UN reports. There's 20 billion videos. It actually just went up today, an archive of the genocide. I believe it's archive. Let me find it. Archive.genocide. I want to give you the right one just so I don't send you to the wrong place. Archivegenocide.com, I believe. Israel Exposed, archivegenocide.com. We can't even show the website. It's too gruesome, but it's thousands and thousands and thousands of videos as proof. So when somebody who is a Christian, who is a white European descendant, American, lifelong American, Mayflower descendant, eighth generation Texan, who has never even been inside of a mosque, like, I don't know what you're talking about. But when I, American, have an opposition to the unchristian, the brutal, the vicious, like I said, just unwarranted, just the un-Western, un-European behavior of the Israelis, they have to try to claim I'm Muslim or something so that other Christian Europeans don't start thinking, hey, wait, why do we support Israel? They don't want you to think, well, I'm not a Muslim, so I must support Israel. No, you're an American. You should never support a country that engages in ethnic cleansing, genocide, murder of innocent people on a massive scale. Well, we'll get back to it on the other side, but stop. You have to stop now.
And a microscopic tag be implanted in a person's body to track his every movement. There's actual discussion about that.
And often they're things you don't know what to do with. UBOs, they're called unidentified bright objects.
Can brain scans be used to determine whether a person is inclined toward criminality or violent behavior?
Who's got the brain that's going to be most susceptible to a particular kind of manipulation?
So the point is, they've been obsessed with this. It's going on. The COVID shots implanted the matrix, graphene oxide to grow. It's now being scanned. It's now being read. They were putting chips in the troops 30 years ago. The revolution's already here, is what you're saying, Jesse Beltran.
These are just chips on a size that you can no longer see. They're nano-sized. One's 2,000 times the width of a human hair. The graphene oxide, the silicon-based materials that have been in, we know for a fact that they were in the mRNA. We know that Dr. Ido Bachelet signed a contract with Pfizer in 2015 when he did that TEDMed talk with a trillion robots in a 1cc syringe, and how he teaches his students how to, once they're in a host, how to control them with RF emissions.
And you heard Colin saying 21 years ago that, oh, yeah, when we're doing scans, we find all these chips, these bright objects, ha, 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 wonder who put them there. But as you said, you've been doing this 20 years, and about 10 years ago, you began to go away, not seeing chips anymore, but just liquid emulsion nanotech. Here you are 6 months ago or more scanning me. Let's go to Alex Jones getting scanned.
So if you put that camera in there, you see how it says probably silicone? That means it's an electronic component. And it's not unusual to find that in the posterior ear area.
So wait, I got a higher reading than him?
No, his was higher than yours.
Okay,
yeah,
that's
yeah, but you did get a positive reading there. So you are getting the base of the neck is what we typically see. Scapula area. What we're finding is after post-COVID, this is very typical. We're completely bombarded by this stuff.
From your own research, there are compounds naturally in nature that just do absolutely incredible things that will draw out these type of things. But you guys have come up with one with scientists that adds these special sea minerals in that then even drags it out even more. And so I have been taking this, the dreams I've had, my skin, my health. What it's done is absolutely insane. Get masterpiece.com. Matt Hazen, tell us what this does, and people can get 10% off when they follow the URL, getmasterpiece.com, or use promo code Alex when you're there on the site, because this is really special.
Zeolite is an incredible mineral that is known as what's called the master binder. And what that means is it's known to pick up every type of forever chemical, toxin, toxic heavy metal there is, including fluoride. So when you see charcoal or carbon or clays for binders, you don't see that they will pick up fluoride. Zeolite's different. Zeolite also gets the fluoride. That's a very big deal. It is great at removing these environmental toxins from our body. Masterpiece is the highest grade sea mineral plasma solution. It is basically isotonic, the same mineral composition as your blood plasma. So the sea minerals are being carried in by the nanometer, sub-nanometer size clinoptilolite zeolite. And once the toxin hits the zeolite, it releases and displaces the mineral. People don't feel bad. There's no normal detoxing reaction.
Everybody needs to go to getmasterpiece.com. You get 10% off by using that URL automatic when you go. There's promo code Alex as well. Getmasterpiece.com.
Back, folks. Again, you don't need ulterior motive to tell the truth. You don't need a reason to be a human being and explain what's actually going on. And there is a term for this, and I'm blanking on it right now, but it's something like, you know, motivation inversion, something like that. Motivation questioning, you know, whatever it is. But it's just that. It's, you know, somebody tells the truth and you try to judo flip them around and go, well, why are you saying this? Well, what do you think the point is of saying this exactly? It's like, well, it's true. That's the point. So again, there are certain sort of code words you can identify when people use them. You know that this person is insincere. They're not to be trusted. They're working off a script that they likely don't understand and ironically are almost certainly being paid to. It's funny, while we were watching the Dana Lash segment, the crew was saying, you know, how much is she getting paid for this? And it's like, she probably is. She probably is getting paid to promote this. It's the ultimate irony that there are people out there that are paid to tell you that other people are paid to tell the truth. DOJ asked to reveal names of Israeli influencers in the U.S. I mean, I would bet you anything Dana Loesch is on Salem. Is she on Salem Media? She seems like the type. Tell me if the crew can find if Dana Loesch is on Salem Media, they're the ones that just registered as foreign agents. But let's go back to Dana Loesch, because again, I'm just pointing out that they have no argument against us. They have no actual point to make. They can call you an anti-Semite, they can call you a Muslim, they can denigrate your podcast, but they have podcasts that are just less popular. So you don't have to listen to them. Like, they don't actually believe what they're saying, but we do have to listen to them to know what they want everybody else to believe, to understand what is intended by their lies and mischaracterization. So let's go back to Dana Loesch.
It's the goal of it, right? That was the whole goal of the Podcast to Stand movement. It is a red green alliance.
And oh yeah, that was the part I wanted to comment on.
Some of the people I think are.
You can tell she's reading off a script that she doesn't understand, because that doesn't make any sense. The red green alliance is a term that's been phrased to talk about the marriage between communists and Islam, far left progressives and Islam. And of course, the irony is that these two organizations, these two identities, are in deep and abiding opposition to each other, and yet ally with each other, because they both are opposed to Western culture, white people, Europeans, capitalism, all that good stuff. But Podcastistan, what she's trying to do is discredit the quote unquote woke right, woke Reich, who is not communist and is not Muslim, but somehow she's trying to tie in podcasters not liking Israel to being communists that are aligned with Muslim. It doesn't make any sense, but it doesn't have to, or she doesn't even realize it doesn't. She's trying. She's really trying, but she's not good at it. Which again, if and only if she understood what she was saying, she wouldn't say that. Do you understand what I mean? Like, if she's saying a red-green alliance, she's supposed to be talking about Islam and the left, but she's actually trying to talk about the right to invoke the red-green alliance. What I'm saying is she's got all of these buzzword talking points in her head. They're getting mixed up. They're getting jumbled. She's invoking them at the incorrect time because she doesn't actually understand what she's saying. She's just trying to pack in as many talking point buzzword slogans as she can in a short amount of time period as she can. So back to Dana Loesch. Confusedly talking about how right-wingers are actually Muslim communists. Sorry, Dana, go on.
Are tools of it. And then I think others are just desperate to supplant their aging cable news audience with Zoomer Waffen. That's what this is. Like the cable news rejects that decided to adopt the podcast format and get in and become Podcastistan, they're trying to supplement their audience is aging out. They're cable news people. And, you know, I mean, you're talking about upper 50s going into their 60s, these cable hosts that are now podcasting.
So I'm confused. Wait. So the cable news watchers are the old people that are no longer relevant. So I'm confused. So Podcastistan, I guess, is the young people. So people that are old. Again, it doesn't even make sense what she's saying. I think what she's trying to say is that people are saying things they don't believe because it's popular with young people right now. That's obviously not the case with us. But she's trying to portray podcast as illegitimate while also talking about the fact that the elderly, you know, cable news demographic is dwindling to nothingness. So how can cable news be this big, prestigious, important thing? Podcasts are the sideshow, when podcasts are where the popularity is, and everybody from cable news is trying to move into podcasts so they can maintain relevance. She's reporting on herself. This is what they're like. What is the Dana Show? What is this? Where does this air? Is it a pod? Looks like a podcast. Doesn't look like a television production. Also, her logo is ineligible or not legible. So there's that. Just wanted to point that out in the meantime. So what even is her show? Is her show on cable? She's got a Stanley tumbler on the desk. That's cool. What's actually happening? Yeah, the crew's pointing out you can see her monitor. You can see, I mean, this is not a cable show. This is a podcast. So what is she talking about? But again, it doesn't even matter what her, you know, what she's trying to, her only point is discredit enemies of Israel. That it's like, you know, imagine like putting into a robot the command, like discredit enemies of Israel. You might get a response. It's like, do I need to be truthful? Do I need to put, and it's like, no, don't worry about any of that stuff. Just discredit them. Discredit them in any way that you want. Say that they're, you know, only saying this because they want to remain popular, or say they're only saying it because they want to be on the edge and they want to not be popular. The mainstream is going this way and they're trying to be edgy. Like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter which way that you go. Say that they're doing it because, you know, they're desperate to try to beat out the cable news people, or say that it's because they're desperate to try to make podcasts a real thing. It doesn't matter to them. It's just discredit the motivation so you don't have to deal with the argument. Oh, people on the right wing are making cogent, accurate criticisms of the state of Israel and America's, well, how would you put it? Marriage to them? Slavery under them? You can't actually argue against it. You can't actually tell us that we're wrong. So just say they're only saying this because they're trying to stay popular. Just undercut and try to undermine and discredit the motivation of telling the truth so the people don't listen to the truth. This is pathetic. And try to just embrace it, Dana. Just embrace it. You're getting old. Everybody does. Stop trying to prevent the march of time. You look plastic, and it's not even as attractive as a wrinkly natural face. I'm just saying, you seem to be enveloped in a sort of bubble of unreality where you're trying desperately to push back against things that are inevitable, things that are unstoppable, things that are in fact to be embraced as a natural progress of time. So the kids are not falling for the propaganda. They don't like a bunch of mass murderers who rape children to use the blackmail to control America. They're just not into that. Get with the times, old lady. Okay? It was real cool when you were, you know, flinging a gun about, but when are we going to use them? But the question is, why did we have them in the first place? Seems to me like it was to prevent a tyrannical and or foreign takeover of our government. And it seems like a foreign power has taken over our government and is becoming tyrannical through our judicial system or our governmental system overall. So when do we use the guns, Dana? When do we use the guns? Let's go back to Dana Lacia, and she goes on. And we won't listen to her for too much longer. But again, I just want to emphasize and just remind you, because the thing is, if people don't know what's going on. Like, I do constantly try to put myself in the mindset of, like, what would it take for somebody to watch this and just go, yeah, that's what's happening. And there's one secret ingredient, and it's ignorance. If this is the only information you're getting, then I can understand why you'd believe it. And that's why they desperately need full spectrum domination, so that everybody that normies are listening to are all saying the same thing, because normies are only tuning in to Fox News and their affiliates. So their affiliated networks. So let's go back to Dana Lacia, where again, I'm just trying to emphasize here, she's talking absolute nonsense. Her only point of any of this, like, if she was more honest, she would just sit here and go, don't listen to people who disagree with me. Just don't listen to them. Don't listen to them. That's all she's saying. She's just saying that over and over again. Don't listen to them because they're just trying to be popular. And actually, they're just podcasters. They don't even matter. But actually, it's just like all these different, all she's trying to say is, please stop listening to them. Please stop hearing what they're saying. Just listen to me. Just stop listening to them. It's like anybody telling you to stop listening to somebody else, but can't actually say why, can't actually explain how they're wrong, is a tyrant themselves. Let's go back to the lady.
And they have got to figure out a way to boost their audience, to propagate their audience, to supplement it.
And even though we're more popular.
That's what they're doing. That's why they're bending to the Zoomer Waff and clickbait.
Clickbait, sure.
And so they're buying into it. But Axios, which I normally don't like to bring up, but I think this is the only thing that I've even seen that discusses it. It looks at Republicans, according to a number of surveys, particularly younger ones, have turned on Israel. They've bought into the Hamas propaganda about Gaza, right? They completely bought into it. They said that.
What?
The one thing I don't like, and this is how you can tell it's from a leftist perspective, is because the piece says that Netanyahu offset that kind of contributed to collapsing Democrat support by cultivating Republicans. No, Democrats decided to become so far left. It's horseshoe theory now. So you have Podcastistan, which is basically just the left. It's horseshoe
wow.
theory.
Amazing.
They're just the left.
Oh, it's just incredible, you know, political insight from this lady. I mean, it's like you think you understand something, then you hear Dana really break it down. You know, I mean, how are we supposed to argue against that? Podcastistan, they're just like the left now. It's like, what? Every day I wake up a little bit farther right. A little bit farther right. Now, it's been going on for a couple of years now. But that's fine. Call me a leftist. I mean, it's just the most pathetic attempt to discredit the correct position that I've ever heard. And this is just obviously a very pathetic and ineffective strategy. It's not working. And it, again, just doesn't make any sense. And it's actually kind of interesting because there was a very long time, the left and woke right, which are exactly the same thing, both think they can use Islam to help mainstream socialism. It's a belief one can have only if they're ignorant. I mean, you 3 minutes of Tucker Carlson praising Islam. He's praising Islam for 3 whole minutes. I bet I could find 3 hours of Tucker Carlson praising Israel. He's much more effusive in his praise of Israel. It doesn't seem to matter, though, does it? Like, if you are a dedicated pro-Israel person all the time, even if you couch every single one of your criticisms of Israel in terms of, I want what's best for Israel, and here's why I think this is not going to be the best for Israel, which you would think would be, you know, an appropriate form of argumentation if you actually do care about Israel. Like, you know, we've been saying this entire time, like we've been saying since the whole war began, this is actually bad for Israel. I'm not against it because it's bad for Israel, but it also is bad for Israel that any of this stuff is happening. But even if you couch all of your criticism like that, even if you are effusive and overabundant in your praise for Israel, you're still anti-Israel if you don't agree with absolutely everything that they do. Meanwhile, if you merely acknowledge anything good Islam has ever done, you are therefore an Islamic agent. It's like, if he's an Islamic agent, then he's more so an Israeli agent. You understand that, right? But it never goes that way. The thing I'm sick of is just like everything being just a game for these people. That's really how I see it. It's all just this like weird game they're playing that has nothing to do with reality, where they're just, it's, because I could almost see participating in this in a game scenario where it's like, you're going to go out, you know, like go try to convince somebody as part of the game of something ridiculous. Like, they know it's not true. You know, it's not true. You don't even care if they think it's true. It's just, you just have to achieve this goal to win the game. And to them, winning the game is just tricking everybody into letting you do whatever you want. And as long as you can do that, you win the game, and there are no rules. Everything's allowed. Lying's allowed. Discrediting is allowed. And the weirdest thing is there's so many other people playing this game that they like get what you're doing and they go along with it. And ironically, just like everything, when you start talking about Israel, you start talking about, you know, the Israeli influence on our politics, everything gets inverted to the maximum degree, and everything that these people are doing is exactly what the left does. The left has all of these tactics. You want to talk about the woke right. This is the woke right. It's when you take a honest, truthful, and meaningful statement, and you extrapolate that out to actually this is evidence of your deep-seated and incurable hatred of something, right? If I say, on average, black people commit more crimes than white people, okay? If there's a little check and an X, the check mark will go off. Ding, that's true. It's true. It's accurate. That is a true and accurate reading of reality. How does the left respond to that? You hate black people. And if I say, Israel is a bunch of psychotic murderers that are committing genocide out in front of everybody. Ding, I'm right. It's true. We all see it. But that must mean I hate Jews, right? Because they're woke. Because these people are woke. These people are, and again, you can see, like, people might be watching me and be like, what the hell is he talking about? I have no idea what he's talking about. But you know what it's like when it's the left, don't you? When the left does this exact type of thing. Yes, yeah, the Pentagon stays quiet. AP reconstructs a U.S. strike that killed over 100 Iranian children. For Israel, of course. But you get it when the left does it. Right? If I'm like, hey, I would like the border to be closed because they drive up house prices and they all go on welfare and it costs us money. Like, there's a lot of really obvious and good reasons. But you can't actually have good, simple, truthful, righteous reasons for thinking something. Not according to the left. To the left, actually, you're just a racist that hates brown people and you're just sort of laundering that view through the acceptable position of I'm just against anti-immigrants, right? You understand that strategy because you see it all the time on the left. This is just what the Jewish lobby is doing. This is, I mean, they're leftist also, right? All the people, the big tech people that came over to Trump, they're all lifelong Democrats, the Alan Dershowitz types who write letters saying, I'm still a Democrat. All of my beliefs are 100% thoroughly progressive, except I'm now a registered Republican because of how they treat Israel. There's a lot of them like that. And just like the left, like they all get it too. Yes, you're all playing this little game, right? They're all pretending not to know about whatever it is, black crime rates or, you know, transgender people in the bathroom. Like, it's that pretend ignorance. It's that, like, what? You think trans people would go into a bathroom to, like, look at it? That's crazy. It's like, you know that's not crazy. You know it's not crazy. We all know that we're right, but when you see the left, you see a bunch of people pretending not to know, pretending, you know, to be moderates when they all know they're extremists, pretending to be proud Americans when we know they want to tear this country down. They all pretend and they all know they're all pretending, which is why they are able to do it. Like, it's actually almost a sophisticated method because, you know, typically, you know, if a left winger expresses something not left wing, you know, they have to have total ideological capture. You say one thing that's wrong, the left wing will tear you apart. Unless you're like a proven left winger and they know what you're doing, they all understand the strategy. Then when you come out and say something that isn't as far left wing, the rest of the left wing goes, that's fine. He's saying that. He's just saying it because he has to. We know how he really feels. So they all get it. They all are playing along. They all understand. Sometimes we say things we don't believe, but that's just because the normies don't understand us. And, you know, we have to serve them some red meat sometimes just so we can get the power we need to do what we actually want to do. It's the same thing here, which is why it's so frustrating, why it's hard to talk about and contend with, is because we're just dealing with a bunch of nothing, a bunch of nonsense liars all lying to each other and agreeing about the lie. And then putting that on TV so the audience sits there and goes, well, they can't both be lying. It's like, it's just lie upon lie upon lie. And it goes on and on. Let's go to this Ben Shapiro clip, if we can. He obviously is a main figure in all of this. The deception, the manipulation, the Pied Piperism of leading conservatives down a path to their own destruction. It's despicable, but pretty obvious, if I may say so. And guys, do you all know the Ben Shapiro clip? I don't see it on the list here, but I do have it printed out. Ben Shapiro's released an emergency warning to all Americans, saying that if Democrats win the midterms, they will immediately investigate, impeach, and attempt to prosecute Donald Trump. Here he is.
If they were to gain control of the Senate, they would move to impeach President Trump. There's an outside shot. They could even get a conviction in a Senate split between a Democratic majority and maybe some rogue Democratic senators. They, of course, will stymie any effort to refund our military. to restock THAADs, Patriot missiles, to build the new kind of military we need to actually challenge our enemies in the world. And again, there is, as I say, the possibility that President Trump gets impeached in the House and then even convicted in the Senate. That's all what happens if the Democrats win the Senate. So there's like very, very serious stuff. And that sets it up for 2028 because if Democrats control
maybe
the Senate.
Maybe he shouldn't have gone to war with Iran then, Ben. You ever think about maybe he shouldn't have gone to war with Iran and maybe he should have released the Epstein files. Maybe then he'd win the midterms and we wouldn't have to worry about him being impeached. Maybe if he'd focused on deportations and getting rid of DEI and transgenderism, maybe if he did the stuff that he campaigned on that the American people want, you wouldn't have to worry about him getting impeached because nobody would want to impeach him. Nobody on our side, at least, because he would actually be doing what he's supposed to be doing and having tangible beneficial effects for the American people. You know what I'm going to say if they impeach Donald Trump this time? I'm going to say, make sure you don't let his kids away also. And, you know, his kids have been enriching themselves too. Don't let them get away with it. I mean, the impeachment's a good start, but we've got major corruption at play here. Don't stop with the president. You've got to keep going. If you didn't want him impeached, if you didn't want him failing and ruining the Republicans' prospects, not just in this round, but God only knows what happens next. No, in fact, I do know what happens next. I know what happens next because the Democrats keep saying it's what they're going to do. What happens next is motivated by the outrageous activity of the Trump administration, the second go around, motivated by his obsequious, desperate loyalty to a foreign murderous state and their cabal of collaborators here in the United States trying to enslave us all under a Palantir global system. I'm trying to calm down. I just need to, I'm going to take a deep breath here. But I can't be the only one, right? I cannot be the only one who sees how absurd all of this. These people get Donald Trump into the war in Iran. These people completely derail his entire administration. Now, these very same people are telling you it is an existential crisis that the Democrats might win now. You did this. This was you. This is your fault. I don't know what else to tell you. He's like, they're not going to vote to refill our THAAD system. Why do our THAAD systems need to be refilled, Ben? Why is it such a desperate? Why are we in such a desperate strait right now? We don't even have the ammunition we would need to defend ourselves. Why not, Ben? Well, what did we waste all of that ammunition doing? Why do the American people now need to spend tens of billions of dollars refilling missile batteries? What happened, Ben? Where did they all go? You did this. The anti-Trump coalition that took over his administration and ruined the Republican Party for the foreseeable future, because you know what's going to happen. Democrats get into power, they open up the border and give away citizenship. That's it for the Republicans forever.
In the forbidden mountains of ancient China, Alex Jones, the warrior, returns to complete his training. His fists thunder against globalist lies. Each board he shatters destroys another New World Order deception. Forged in the fire of truth, he trains day and night. Iron palm strikes smashing through Big Pharma's walls. He prepares for the ultimate demon, Fentanyl the Dragon.
Oh, hello, Alex. It is I, Fentanyl the Dragon, your arch nemesis.
Fentanyl, you dare to return and face me?
Visit the AlexJonesStore.com today.
Real time, uncensored, unstoppable. AlexJonesLive.com. Take a stand. Share the link.
Do you want to fight? You better believe you got one!
America's worth saving. I seen this country build towns where there was nothing but dust and empty sky. Men worked sun up to sundown, built roads, railways, farms, and cities with their bare hands. People came here with nothing in their pockets and somehow carved out a life worth living. That's what made this place different. Not power, not money, freedom. And as long as there's still a few hard-headed Americans standing tall, America's story ain't over yet.
You can feel the noose tightening all across America. Fight the enemy before they hang freedom itself.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back to War Room Live. Second hour is on. I gotta admit, it really is just frustrating because, like, how many times can you say the same thing over and over? And it is just the same thing over and over. And it's sort of the shocking thing about how all of this works. It's not just that the same thing happens over and over. Like, if you're a fan of history and you go back in time, one of the really shocking things is you're reading stuff from 100 years ago and you're going, this is the same thing we're going through now. How have we not broken out of this cycle in a century? It's been a century of this. And it kind of didn't matter what it is, but just the endless lies, the endless deception, the endless manipulation, and the endless just like memory erasure. I don't know what it is exactly, but like Ben Shapiro's kind of the perfect example. Like, he was always anti-Trump. Even through all of Trump's first term, he was pro-DeSantis. Like, he was always anti-Trump. And then he just goes, I'm MAGA, actually, I represent the Trump administration. Then he immediately, basically, you know, criticizes them, casts them to the side, says they're idiots as soon as they, you know, try to get peace with Iran. But like, in the very beginning of all of this, it was like, Trump is... We kept saying, like, Trump is losing his opportunity. The longer it takes to go after the deep state, the longer it takes to get the deportations ramped up, like, we're losing out on crucial minutes here. You know, this was in 2025, like, early on. I remember in, like, February being like, if he's not doing it by the end of February, are we going to start to get worried? If we aren't seeing the massive ramping up of deportations by the end of April, like, when are we really going to start, you know, being concerned about the lack of seriousness here? And just never arrived. And he starts, you know, the Epstein thing, and the, you know, he starts saying, I don't even need your votes if you think Epstein matters. And then, of course, the war in Iran, just major catastrophe. And the whole time, we're making the argument in a couple different ways, but one of the main ways of making the argument is being like, this is going to destroy us in the midterms. Like, we only have 2 years to get a lot of this done, passing the SAVE Act most especially. If you don't pass the SAVE Act, you can't trust the midterms. They're going to steal the midterms, and that's it for Trump. So, like, that's got to be top of the list. Like, we were saying all of this. We were saying we shouldn't go to war with Iran. We get told to shut up. And then 2 months later, Ben Shapiro's going, you know, we might lose the midterms. And it's like, how long are we going to do this? How long are we going to do this? And I, you know, I wish I had more sophisticated ways to describe this stuff. But to me, it's all very visceral. It's all very like, you either get it or you don't. I'll show you another video on the other side that I don't know why I feel the need to connect these things. The video I'll show you on the other side is a woman in Congress trying to question a school administrator about a situation in which a trans kid was photographing boys in the locker room. The boys were punished more than the trans person was, even though the trans person was doing the bad thing. And of course, the response you get is like a response from any bureaucrat, where they just sort of repeat a line from the guidebook, where they're just like, we always punish students in accordance with the guidelines published by our district. And it's just like, are we human beings? Are you a human being? Am I a human being? Are you a robot? Like, can we not have this conversation? Can you not hear what I'm saying and then respond to me appropriately? And I don't know what it is exactly that is allowed. I'm going to have to think about how to express this, because there's something like fundamentally wrong with our entire system. And it has to do with the way language is used to dance around issues. And it really is like the core of why we can't get anything done. And when you really think about this problem and like what you would need to overcome it, it's pretty simple, but it's also pretty dramatic. I'll explain on the other side.
The InfoWar is not gone. It has been reborn. AlexJonesLive.com is the new site to find the next step in the InfoWar. Articles, video reports, live streams, breaking news. It's all on AlexJonesLive.com. We need you to be the Paul Revere's and share the links. You can also find us on X at Real Alex Jones and on Rumble at rumble.com/The Alex Jones Show Live. And don't forget to download the app. Go to alexjonesapp.com. The fight continues. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
AlexJonesLive.com. We've only just begun to fight.
All right, welcome back, folks. We're going to hit some pretty crazy news here in just a second. I just want to spend another segment or so trying to sort of puzzle this out in real time, and hopefully you'll vibe with what I'm saying. A witness turns bright red after GOP representative calls out trans bathroom decision. This is clip 19 here, and we'll just let it play. But this is the clip I was talking about in the last segment. If you didn't see that. There's something about this guy's response that to me is emblematic of what's wrong with our entire system. And it's this weird lack of humanity that comes across that allows people to protect themselves from the truth. And they're able to sort of dance around things. And the thing is, it shouldn't work, but in our system it does. And this is the part that I'm sort of baffled by, and how do we correct this? And then to me, you see a video like this, I'll play it in just a second, where again, it's very cut and dry. It's very simple what she's asking, but this guy is in this bureaucratic, lawyerish kind of mindset where he can't possibly acknowledge that something wrong might have been done, because then he'll open himself up to vulnerability and he'll get sued, or his district might get sued. So he can't acknowledge anything bad happened, but also he can't really make a promise to change things if he doesn't acknowledge what was bad before. So it's better just to like pretend you don't even understand the language that's being said. And it's like, this shouldn't work. This shouldn't work. Anybody who tries this type of thing should be so embarrassed and shamed by everybody else that nobody would ever try it again. But it works, again, because everybody is kind of in on it. I'm trying to draw this through line, and hopefully people listening to me now just sort of, again, you just sort of get it or you don't. Maybe I'm the only one that thinks this way, but we'll watch the video. And then again, try to connect it to like you wouldn't run anything like this. This doesn't exist anywhere outside of government, what you're about to see. I guess it exists in the corporate world to a certain extent, but even then, there's usually a CEO or somebody that can just cut through the mess and get to the bottom of things. Well, let's go to the clip and I'll break it down. But this is one of the most infuriating 5 minutes I've ever watched, because the person's just pretending not to be a human being, and it's infuriating. Let's watch.
This school county superintendent turned into a bumbling mess after getting caught flat-footed by a direct question about the policies that they have in place when students are filmed by transgender students. I know, it's confusing, it's a lot, it's a mouthful. Watch this video because it is insane.
Mr. Spencer, Dr. Spencer, excuse me, I'd like to start with you. Can you share with me what your school's policy is on videotaping in private spaces?
Yes, that's not allowed.
It's not allowed. What would be the punishment for such behavior?
I mean, there's a range of punishments up to and including long-term suspension.
Give me some ranges.
Sure. As I said, in-school suspension, long-term suspension, up to and expulsion. Just depends on case-by-case basis what's occurred.
What's the criteria that you would use to determine the punishment?
So we would look at sort of from a progressive discipline standpoint, what was videotaped. Whether or not
it would be acceptable.
Again, nothing's acceptable in terms of videotaping.
Okay, so
students aren't supposed to have access.
You have
to
a policy like no videotaping allowed whatsoever, right?
Right, of other students, correct?
Okay, could you ever see a realm where people that got videotaped would be the actual like perpetrator? The people that actually were videotaped were the problem. Could you ever see that being a problem?
So no.
Well, good. Thank
I mean,
you.
I know where
Let
you're
me
going,
ask you a couple questions.
No,
then
sure.
She said
Let's
no. I appreciate that. Let's go on to a specific instance that happened in May 2025. Three boys at Stonebridge High School complained to the administrators that after they were filmed by a biological female in the boys' locker room, which you clearly stated is unacceptable, and you can't see a scenario that that would be a problem. Could you tell me what your school's response was to that?
So, and I know this is going to be frustrating to you, but I'm not.
It's not going to be frustrating to me. It's going to be frustrating to you.
I'm not going to speak on the specifics of.
Okay, you want to speak some hypotheticals? If you don't want
to
speak specifics, that's cool. No, I'll give you your word.
I'm willing to speak.
I'll give you. You don't want to speak specifics.
I'm willing to speak in general and say.
Okay, great. Let's speak in specific. Let's speak in general.
That based on our policies, we would never discipline students absent a violation.
Okay, cool. Let's
of
speak in hypotheticals.
Disciplinary policy.
I'm gonna give you your world, right? Since you're afraid to speak in specifics, even though your guidelines
not
are
not going to
specific.
Speak about a specific student incident.
Okay, just out of curiosity, why not?
Because I'm not at liberty to
sure you are.
Share
You're choosing
information
not to.
This about
isn't a,
student
this isn't
disciplinary
a can't,
matters.
Sir. You're a highly educated individual. You know you can speak on specifics. This is a won't, but I'll give you your world. Let's speak in hypotheticals. So hypothetically speaking, there are three boys in a locker room. Hypothetically speaking, what usually happens in a locker room? People change in a locker room. They undress. It should be a private space, hypothetically speaking, right, sir? Mr. Spence, you paying attention?
I am.
Okay, great. So hypothetically speaking, is that correct?
Hypothetically speaking.
Super. Great.
I'm just to clarify. Hypothetically speaking,
hypothetically
students change in locker rooms and should be able to change
right, it's kind of a private space, right? Yeah, good. I'm glad we agree. So let me get this. In what universe, hypothetically speaking, would it make sense to you for a biological female, or anyone for that matter, to come in and begin videotaping me, and then the three boys that hypothetically in your world got videotaped, got a 10-day suspension, and the perpetrator, you know, the biological female in the boys' bathroom that's supposed to be a safe space, which you say is completely unacceptable to film in safe places, could you explain in what realm, what universe, hypothetically speaking, that biological female would receive a lesser sentence? The person that does the filming gets, say, hypothetically, a one-day in-school suspension, hypothetically. But the victims that got filmed got a 10-day suspension, hypothetically. What's your response to that hypothetical question?
Our school division would not discipline students absent a violation of our disciplinary policies.
Excuse me? What the heck does that mean?
Our
so in what realm does that make sense to you?
A violation of our discipline.
So what
policy?
Realm does that make sense to you, sir?
our school division.
That's a great answer to a question I didn't ask.
Discipline students absent a violation of our discipline.
The victims got a 10-day suspension, hypothetically. Yeah. The person, the biological female that did the filming got a 1-day suspension, hypothetically. You're telling me that's okay? That's tolerable? That's cool? That's acceptable?
As I said before, our school district would not discipline students.
You are extremely weak, pathetic, and thank God my children didn't go to your school.
I disagree with your characterization.
You can disagree hypothetically.
So comment below with your response. Listen, at the end of the day.
Loudoun County High School student accused of filming students in bathroom under investigation. The Freedom High School principal told parents the incident does not appear to be isolated as sheriff's office investigates. But do you see what I'm saying? Do you see what I mean? We do not punish students without a violation of the student handbook. It's just like watching that video. It made me think we need a king. It's almost like we need a king. It's almost like I don't want to talk about this stuff anymore. We shouldn't need to talk about this stuff anymore. We shouldn't have to listen to them. We shouldn't have to debate them. I don't care if they're unwilling to admit what they're doing. I don't care if they're just obstinately lying constantly about what we shouldn't have to listen to them. We shouldn't have to pay attention to them. And so it just reminds me of I don't know, my kids will try to, as a parent, you don't want to just 40 other victims in the past 3 years. Jeez, I'm Pete. Nick Minock reported Tuesday that multiple sources told him the Freedom High School student accused of taking pictures and videos of other students in the bathroom stalls identifies transgender, and there may be more than 40 potential victims over the last 3 years. And Loudoun County is the perfect example, and it happens over and over again. This is just the latest in the incredibly long series of more or less this exact thing, same thing happening. And I'm sure you're sick of hearing it from me, but just to reiterate, just to remind you of what happened in Loudoun County, is there was a big vote coming up to determine whether or not they would allow transgender students into bathrooms. Now, they already were doing that, but they wanted to have it officially, as a rule, just to shut up all the racist transphobes out there so they can point to it and go, but it's in the rules, but it's legal because it's in the rules. Again, this is all part and parcel of the same, mindset that I'm trying to define so we can destroy it. I don't know what it is exactly, but that's a part of it too, right? It's like, but it's in the rule book. It says my son can watch your daughter change. It's in the rule book though. And it's like, I don't care what's in the rule. What are you talking about? And the rule book's wrong and it needs to be burned and you along with it. But this is this whole sort of attitude, right? So Loudoun County wanted to change the rule and they were going to vote on it. There was a vote coming up. So the topic of safety of women in transgender bathrooms was a major topic. Unfortunately for them, at this exact moment, a trans girl, a boy in a skirt, raped a girl in a bathroom in a Loudoun County school. Now, for human beings, you would have a couple reactions to that. If you were a human being, and say you thought that the opposition to transgender bathrooms, it was absurd, it was nonsense, it was fear-mongering, there was no threat. The instant that you see that a boy dresses up like a girl, goes into a girl's bathroom and rapes a girl, your reaction as a human being should be to go, oh my God, the threat is real. Never mind. I thought it was fake. I thought it was fear mongering. I thought you were lying. I now see that you are in fact accurate. Here with my own eyes is a little girl who's had her life probably destroyed, at least for a time period. She's probably not going to want to go to the bathroom alone for a little while because of the trauma that we've subjected her to. My God, what a horrible thing. Let's not let this thing happen again. That would be the human response to all of this. Yeah, and the reason all this came out is because when the dad went to protest, the cops drag him to the ground and arrest him and throw him out. Because what actually happened in the school district is they saw the rape happen and they thought, gee, this looks bad for our bill. This looks bad for our vote coming up. We better cover it up. And to cover it up, we better not punish the person who did it. We better just quietly shift them over. They took the Catholic Church tactic. Oh, you got a rapist priest? Don't punish him. Don't expose him. Don't send him to jail. Don't call the cops. Don't even punish him internally. Just move him a little farther away to a population that doesn't know what he's done. So, you know, he can do it again. What do you think happened? They move the kid to a different school. He does it again. So these people aren't human is what I'm saying. Well, I don't know what's motivating them, but it's nothing I recognize. Because to me, if I'm voting because I want to help, I want to help trans people be who they are, and I don't want to see a bunch of trans, you know, people with this troublesome thing they were born with, and, you know, they need our support. And like, okay, I can imagine being an idiot. I can imagine being a dumb, brainwashed, moron, incompetent fool who believes that sort of stuff. I can put myself in that mindset. I cannot put myself in the mindset of the people that continue to believe that and continue to push that and actually actively cover up the evidence when it is shown that their position is abjectly wrong and actually extremely dangerous to the very people they're supposed to support. So I don't know what we do about this. I don't know what we do about these people. Because to me, seeing this, and I was relating it to my kids, like as a parent, you know, you don't, like, you know, your kid always models whatever you do. So, you know, you don't just go up and snatch something out of their hand because then they're just going to go do that to their sister. And it's just a cycle. So, you know, you never jump right to just like physical intervention. But like a lot of times there's a certain point where you're like, please do this. Will you please do? I'll explain why you should do this. But now you have to do it. You're going to get in trouble if you don't do it. You got to do this now. And eventually you just go, I'm doing it for you. There. If you didn't want me to do it, you should have done it earlier. Like, at a certain point, you have to stop arguing with the children and be the adult and just do what needs to be done. Of course, the problem is, if America were to be ruled by some unquestioning person, it would almost certainly be some blue-haired psychopath. And, you know, I have an existential fear of establishing any sort of system where somebody can just make decisions without any pushback whatsoever. But how do you deal with a system where the pushback is infinite, where it never stops, where you're constantly having to try to debate and argue with people who are not arguing in good faith and don't have anybody's best interest in mind and are just engaged in this big game of deception that they think, if only I can lie well enough, then I'll win. How do you deal with people like this? How do you deal with people who you can ask them, like, there was this situation in your school where this happened. Wasn't that wrong? And they can't respond to it. They can't acknowledge it. They certainly aren't going to make any changes to make sure it never happens again. How do you deal with people like this? And how do we deal with it on a societal level? That this is what our entire system is. Our entire system is a bunch of like very obvious crap that we cannot solve, that we cannot handle, that we cannot deal with because our system is run by these retards who just like will not acknowledge reality, will not tell the truth, will not admit when they're wrong, will push for the most devastating policies you can possibly imagine because they have this bizarre fantasy that they're fighting against opposition or oppression that has not existed in 100 years. Like, what do we do here? What do we do about this? Because these people are insane and we have to stop listening to them and even giving them a chance to talk. That is literally my position. Like, because to me, as I'm watching this video of this, you know, fat, weak, pudgy, pathetic school administrator pretending not to be a human being, pretending like he can't understand what's being said, like in my mind, what needs to happen is there needs to just be like a dude with a crown and a scepter who's just like, I don't care what you think. Whack. we're just going to do what's right. We got to stop talking about this eventually. Eventually, we got to stop trying to convince these people to come over to our side. Eventually, it's just got to be like, your policy gets girls raped. You're gone. You're gone. You're going to jail. We're not talking about it anymore. I'm not listening to the reasons you think it needs to happen. I don't care. You're just a liar. You're just a barrier to our progress. Do you get what I'm saying? Do you understand what I'm saying? Do you understand I have exactly the same feeling when I hear people talk about Podcastistan being funded by Qatar? That's just like, shut up. Like, what? Why do we have to even talk to these people? Why are these people? Why can nobody else see through them? Like, that's the real question, is like, how can nobody else see through just this endless deception, the endless manipulation, the endless absurdity. How is it that we feel the need to, like, discuss this? Because that really is the thing. Is, to me, you watch that, I would think absolutely everybody who watched that would be like, that guy was a scumbag. That guy was a slug. He was a slug person. He knows exactly what he's doing, and he wants people to be abused. He won't punish the abusers. He must want it to keep going. Like, that can be the only conclusion. But you know that at least half the people watching that are just like, that horrible Republican trying to politicize this tragic event, you know? And it's just like, I'm sick of hearing these people talk. Like, I'm just sick of it. And it just goes on and on. Let's go to this one. This is Jewish Democrat Jake Auchincloss calling for censorship on social media to fight against anti-Semitism. Of course. Clip 25. Let's watch.
I reject the mushrooming of anti-Semitism within the Democratic Party, which is a problem. I reject it within the Republican Party, where it is a problem. You saw Tom Massey run ads with Star of David behind his opponent. You see Brandon Herrera in Texas wallowing in Nazi iconography. It's a huge issue on both sides. We have to condemn it on both sides, and I've done that clearly and unequivocally for the last 5 years. We also have to look at the fundamental drivers of anti-Semitism, which I believe is social media. In general, scapegoating of Jews happens in failed societies. It happens when the pathologies of the moment are turned against the other. And right now, we're seeing anti-Semitism mushroom on social media because it's a failed society. There's no norms, there's toxicity, and we have to hold Meta and TikTok and Insta and Snap and the rest of them accountable for the corrosion that they are platforming.
Counterpoint. Shut up, idiot. Counterpoint here. Shut up and go away forever. The floor is yours. Rep Auchincloss, this is from ADL, called out anti-Semitism on both sides of the aisle and named social media as a key driver. He's right. That's why ADL supports the Bipartisan Jewish American Security Act, JASA, which would require platforms like Meta, TikTok, and Snap to publicly report on how they moderate anti-Semitic content. We urge Congress to pass it now. They have to report to us, your unelected, self-appointed Jewish overlords. Everything that they say has to be approved by us, or else we'll kill them. Yeah, like, again, to me, we're just at a point where I don't feel the need to argue against that. I don't feel the need to try to rebut it or discredit his statement. It's discrediting on its face. And at this point, if you can't see that, like, I'm not really that interested in trying to convince you. Well, what were his examples of anti-Semitism? Why does he think we should abolish, in effect, the fundamental underlying value of our entire system, free speech? Why does he think free speech needs to be eradicated to protect the feelings of Jews? Because Thomas Massey had a Star of David in one of his videos, and some other guy revels in Nazi iconography. What the hell does that even mean? Does he have an eagle? Because the Nazis liked eagles too, so therefore he's a Nazi. Like, does he have a swastika tattoo? No. So what are you talking about? And here's my question. I don't even know what the hell you're talking about. A Thomas Massey and a Star of David. I never saw Thomas Massey really bring up Jewish people in his administration. I saw a lot of Jewish people talking about their opposition to Thomas Massey on the basis of their Judaism. Okay, so he has a picture of Paul Singer where Paul Singer is sitting in front of a Star of David. Did Thomas Massey put him in front of the Star of David, or was he sitting in front of the Star of David? And that's why you want to destroy the First Amendment, because Paul Singer's Jewish and Thomas Massey doesn't like him?
Do not help fund the resistance. You sit comfortably. You consume. You watch. You wait for others to fight the battle for you. The dark side has you firmly in its grasp. Every day, you remain on the sidelines. My power grows stronger.
Continue believing. Someone else will save the galaxy. It pleases me greatly.
Real time. Uncensored. Unstoppable. AlexJonesLive.com. Take a stand. Share the link.
Do you want to fight? You better believe you got one!
Nothing can stop me. The force lies within.
There is no escape from what you are becoming. Lay down your weapon or be destroyed.
A very special event is about to happen this July 4th, 2026. The 250th anniversary of the beginning of our republic. And hey, our country's had a lot of problems, done a lot of bad things, but it's also done a lot of exceptional things. And it created the model of human liberty that others have aspired to across the world. That's why the globalists have come to this nation and tried to take it over, because our liberties and freedoms amassed so much wealth, so many inventions, so much ingenuity, that it became the center of the world. So tyranny came here and had pretty much taken the nation over. But now we have major beachheads at the federal, state, and local level. And there are populist movements expanding and raging across the world in the Great Fourth Turning, the Great Awakening. Their Great Reset, their COVID attack, their lockdowns have only backfired on them. And their attempts to launch all these wars has only awoken humanity. And that's why we're doing a fundraiser right now until the end of July, with more than a dozen limited edition shirts, some of the best designs ever at thealexjonesstore.com that are only available through the month of July. Ladies and gentlemen, these shirts fund our operation. They're great fabric. They feel really good. They're printed right here in the United States in Arkansas. And I designed many of these shirts. These are some of the best, cleanest designs we've ever had. This one just came from Arkansas out of the mail. It hasn't even been washed yet or even folded. That's why it's got a few wrinkles. It looks even better once you've washed it and taken out of the dryer. And we've got a whole bunch of incredible designs we're putting on screen right now. And when you wear these shirts out in public, you meet like-minded people, it is a real adventure. There are hundreds of other incredible designs, ball caps. Many of them are limited edition. All these 250th anniversary are, and they're only available at thealexjonesstore.com. Look at this. America, 76, 250 years with the Betsy Ross flag on the arm. That's what it's all about. So get your shirts now. Get the best supplements, the best water filtration, and more at thealexjonesstore.com, and keep us on the air. Thank you so much for your support. America is coming back from the dead thanks to you.
Reality starts here. AlexJonesLive.com. Share the link. Spread the word.
This is an emergency transmission from FEMA Region 6 in occupied North America.
There is a war. It's happening now. It will decide the fate of humanity. The time has come to choose sides. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance. Share the links now at AlexJonesLive.com.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Auchincloss receives over $1 million from AIPAC. AIPAC's Jake Auchincloss wants more social media censorship. He regularly conflates criticism of Israel with anti-Semitism. Well, this is the exact type of material that would be banned if he had his way. See, I mean, this is the type of dangerous anti-Semitism that he wants eliminated, and the only thing standing in his way is that troublesome First Amendment. God, if we could only... we could only conflate the First Amendment with white supremacy, then we could get rid of it once and for all. And finally, we can wield our influence in total obscurity. Yeah, it's not really all that confusing, is there? In fact, yesterday, it was either a video or an article, but I didn't get to it. I didn't cover it. But in Germany, they just
instituted some safety protocols, you know, to make sure that things expressed online comport with the lawful expression that Germans are allowed to make. And a woman asked, I think she must have asked ChatGPT, how do we get rid of Ursula von der Leyen? Right? Because it's a democracy. What would be the strategy of swapping your leaders? What would be the best strategy and to pursue if your attempt is to replace one democratic leader with another? And she was immediately banned for that question. So, like, this is the type of stuff that I'm sick of having to try to talk about, because we know what their real motives are. It, you know, the classic example, it's like, I'm not interested in standing at my doorstep debating with a thief who's dressed up like a plumber about my water system. Like, that's how it feels right now. And I'm like, you're just a thief trying to get in my house. And they're like, oh, but, you know, what do you know about L brackets? I'm like, I'm not interested in talking to you about, you're not going to convince me that I need you to let you in my house to fix plumbing. You're just casing the joint. I know what you're doing. We don't have to talk. I don't have to debate you and get you to admit it before I just slam the door in your face and lock it or pull out a gun and get you off my property. Like, that's where I'm at this point. It's just like, I'm done discussing any of this crap. None of it is even up for debate. The entire point of the debate, like the entire reason the debate exists, is a bunch of liars are just lying endlessly and can't get what they want if they don't convince you of their lies. They have to keep trying to make these lies work, and it's just infuriating and exhausting. At a certain point, we need to just stop listening to these people. And it's just like across the board. I guess as we approach 250th anniversary of our founding, I guess I'm feeling a little xenophobic these days. A little xenophobic. You know, I'm scared of the outsiders / just sick and tired of it. It would be different. Like, maybe the most frustrating thing is the appearance of and the facsimile of open debate, where you get the feeling that whoever's got the better argument is going to win the day. And if you have proof of your statement, then the people you're talking to, when presented that proof, will come over to your side. And it's the, once again, sort of like disappointed optimist, where it's like, I can imagine a world where, sure, you've got a strongly held belief and I have a strongly held belief, but we can talk about it. And hey, maybe I come over to your side. Maybe you come over to mine. I've seen it happen in my own life. It's happened to me where I thought one thing. You know, I talked about one yesterday where, you know, around 2016, I'd been more, you know, listening and reading more libertarian stuff and didn't think the border was that important, but I listened to Donald Trump's arguments. They were convincing. They made a hell of a lot of sense, and I changed my mind. I would later go and have conversations with leftists. I would make those same arguments. They would acknowledge the arguments were valid and the conclusions were accurate, and then they wouldn't change their mind. That's what I don't understand, and that's what's infuriating, is we have this entire system set up to have these discussions to come to truth, but everybody enters into the discussion with a pre-established conclusion that they won't change from and that is wrong on the face of it. It honestly just goes on and on. So I want to go now to a very important message on American values from a show called Identity Politics and a friend of the show, by the way. Let's go to clip number 20. Hello? Clip 20. Let's go to clip 20, guys.
Now, of course, what does he mean by American values? Where did those American values come from? What year were they invented? I mean, what are we dealing with right now? We've got the Asian lawyer from the ACLU and Ketanji Brown Jackson wondering what the founders meant. I mean, does anyone else see the absurdity here? So, like, Chinese birth tourists and every Mayan in some Central American jungle can crawl in here and say they're just as American as we are? We all know what's going on here, and so do they. This whole thing is a farce. What are these American values? Because if we actually want to go to the founding generation, you want to talk about American values? Those values were religious fanaticism, white nationalism, race war for land acquisition, and a determination to shoot anyone who says you have to pay your taxes. There's your American values. I mean, this country was founded by racist smugglers, frontier warlords, land speculators, and plantation owners pretending to be Romans. And that's why it's the greatest country in the world.
That is the type of speech that we need ahead of this 250th anniversary of the founding of the country. What's this? Wait a second. I've got a feeling.
You messed it up. I was hoping you didn't see me there.
I was trying.
You know why? There was dead air and they wouldn't play the clip. Not the crew's fault. I violated my own worst rule. I was in the control room pontificating.
Having a conversation.
No, I was busy. I had to go take care of an errand. I'm like, I want to see this Owen joke you did. And then I was here. They were recounting to me what you'd been doing. So we were talking about your show. And I just want to say this. I love Owen Schroyer's new look. I think it's a very good stunt he's pulled. He has really pulled it off. If I am going to ever direct a Hollywood movie where there's a guy driving around in an ice cream truck that delivers children to Hit the Clown, he is getting the starring role. So I think it's great. I think it's an Andy Kaufman type deal. Owen's a very handsome guy. And somehow he found a way to, this is what he wanted. He wants publicity and, this is definitely a good publicity stunt for him, so I hope it helps his show.
It's a look. It's certainly a look.
Well, he also called me the other day and he said, well, you're not allowed to talk about Israel. And
me? Oh, shoot.
Actually, that's not true. That's what he said about me. But anyways, the point is, and you're not talking about Israel right now.
Never, not
Get
once.
Get back on it.
I've never even heard of it.
Hey, this hat right here, though, is the answer to the tyranny of the Alex.
Hold on. Here's what I want to know.
Now, let me get on it.
How does the hat look with the wig?
Oh, I'm going to host
that's
it.
On it.
And I wasn't going to talk about it because I don't want to get in a fight with Owen. I actually like Owen a lot. I'm going to host now. Just get out of the chair.
All right.
I am censoring now. All right.
Crew, bring it down.
And since I'm going to act like Owen, like the last year he was here, like walk by and say hi to me.
Hey, Owen, how you doing? How you doing, buddy? You doing good? Yeah? You doing all right?
Yeah.
All right. You look good work, brother.
Yeah. You realize what a rock star I am? I'm going to be the new Rush Limbaugh, right? I have a gold. He actually told me, he goes, I'm going to be the new Rush Limbaugh. Okay, I'm going to be the biggest host in the world. Got a gold microphone.
He just needed the wig. Now that he's got
the Limbaugh didn't have this. So the problem is, oh, my God, he was the ambassador. Now, how could I look that creepy, though? Here's the deal. I think it's a stunt, but he's lost like 30 pounds. And he was not fat before. So does he have a tapeworm? Because he kind of looks like a cross between Freddie Mercury and John Holmes, who did die of AIDS.
You think he's got AIDS?
I don't think Owen has AIDS. Don't joke around about that. I don't know.
All right, how's it look with the hat? That's what we got.
No, this is what we're... See, I'm not trying to be mean. I actually want to help him with this publicity stunt. I mean, he already used me for a publicity stunt saying I was censoring, which wasn't true. So, I mean, maybe I gave Owen AIDS. Yeah. All right, folks, it's the War Room. And, you got those Orthodox Catholics, the Orthodox Church over in Russia. You know, the Orthodox Church is Catholic. I have quite the geopolitical understanding of things. And, have you been to a baseball game lately? Actually, when I attacked Owen, it gave me some really big numbers. And, of course, now I feel sad, actually. The show's not doing too well. I actually mean that. We're helping you now, Owen. You want publicity? The truth is that he actually looks like, who's the actor, Matthew McConaughey, that does the Buyers Club? I was actually saying to the crew this morning, I was like, he looks like the Buyers Club guy. And they're like, that was the next meme right under it.
So, you think
but remember, we're on hundreds of radio stations. People are driving around, and enough of our old audience on radio stations listen to know that. So they're kind of like, no, we're talking about. We're talking about our former co-host, who now, if you're not a TV viewer, you can't see it. You're going to be searching his name now. I don't know. I would say he looks healthier than Owen right there. So I'm not kidding. Actually, I don't think it's a stunt. I think Owen's had a nervous breakdown. So we should stop making fun of him. In fact, I didn't tell you what to do, but people asked if I was going to cover it. I didn't cover it. But you did this mean-spiritedly. You made me do it.
I thought it was cool. I was
Dude, I look like a total stud right now.
Looks good. You can have the wig.
I mean, will they know it's fake, though? Or they can tell it's a toupee?
I don't know. It looks pretty good. I like it.
All right, I'm going to let you do your show again. I actually came in here just to let you know that I violated my own rule. Matt was running the board. He did finally say, shut up! And he goes, Alex is doing story time right now. Oh, my God, they're going to say I'm doing an Illuminati code thing with one eye's covered up.
Well, you're Agartha. You're Hyperborean right now. You're one of the tallest.
We have come to your planet in peace. You will live forever, but you must kill all the humans. Take your DMT, and we always come to say, kill. Jesus is not the way. Kill everyone. We are here to love you in peace. Kill everyone, and you will transcend to the Hale-Bopp Comet.
People are like, I'm being serious. The DMT demons always tell you to kill yourself and kill everybody, but it's loving and liberal.
I'm the new Rush Limbaugh. Oh, God, I'm so sick of this. Oh, God, I don't have a golden microphone.
Yeah, you can't take your shirt off.
Folks, should I take my shirt off? Folks, I wasn't trying to fool you. I wasn't trying to fool you. I'm actually bald-headed, okay? This was not... I mean, bovine colostrum helps regrow hair, but not... Oh, yeah. That's it. Hold on. Dude, this is real. Hold on, guys. Cut. Don't let them know this is fake. God, we're trying to see people right now. I'm trying to convince them I'm not a clone. Here. How do you do this? I've never... Hold on.
There you go.
Okay. Hold on. Actually, this is how it works. These bovine colostrum gummies are so strong and make your hair and nails grow so good that you eat one capsule. They do taste delicious. Great flavor. And literally, this fast. Put something on screen so I can deceive them. Yeah, yeah. Literally, in seconds, ba-boom, dun-dun-dun. Oh, look at those goldy. That's how my color of my hair was when I was like three. It was white, then it was yellow, then it was, you know, look at that. I mean, this is incredible. Oh, my God. Oh. If you take another gummy, it grows a hat. What is it? Like a fishing line.
I know, it gets everywhere.
Okay. Quality wear. Back to me. And look. Shazam!
Magic.
It even grows hats. Let's cut back to the ice cream truck driver. Look, the golden microphone. It's the final ingredient. I like it, actually. I mean, let me tell you, 1970s Ultra Creep is in. All right, I'm going to stop. We love you, Owen. You got the attention you wanted.
I'm just saying it's not a good stunt when the stunt itself overrides what you're trying to say. I don't even know what he was saying in the video.
I don't think it's a stunt, dude. He thinks he's Rush Limbaugh, man, with 5,000 listeners. It's really sad. But he gave me a good dead cat bounce when I got mad at him attacking him, but I'm over the fact that he lied about me. I actually like it. I enjoy it. Anyway, we'll see you, buddy.
We pray for the best for Owen.
Don't you talk about Israel one time.
Never once. I've never even... mentioned it, I don't think. All right, folks. Now, look, I'm not a doctor, so I can't tell you whether Bovine Colostrum Plus will grow you a hat on your head, but I think it's worth a shot. I think it's worth a try. The grape flavor is delicious, and you just might grow a hat. So what do you know? It's worth a shot, isn't it? I'm telling you, the hair gets absolutely everywhere. Maybe we'll put it on the skull. Maybe it'll be a good look for the skull. We'll do that. That'll be our background advertisement. All right, where were we? We're celebrating the 4th of July. I think that's where we were days away from the 250th anniversary of the birth of these United States and our glorious triumph through history. And you can celebrate it today by going to thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison to let them know who sent you. Get the 1776 cross musket embroidered hat. And it is embroidered. You can actually see the very fine stitching on the backside if you go to dot cam here. You can see just because a lot of times if you want to get a hat, it's just a patch that they like iron on. Not this stuff. This stuff is, very, very well made, very high quality. I've got ink stains on my fingers. That's embarrassing, but everything else is perfect. It is the coolest hat I've ever seen. I might steal this one too. Hell, I might steal two hats. That's just how cool they are. I gave the other one to my son and I mean, how cute is that? Father and son matching hats. 4th of July, we might have to do it. That might have to happen. I do hope you support us. And at the end of the day, you know, I got a lot of news still to get to. And part of me feels bad when I just
like today, for example, nearly over the second hour, I feel like I've spent a lot of this time just trying to identify, trying to define, and trying to explain the mindset of the left. I hope you find that valuable. I hope it's like a way of thinking about it that people haven't thought about before. Or if nothing else, you know, I hope that we can just be sort of an outlet that's just like, because I know there are millions of people out there that every single day you're seeing multiple videos of arguments being made, discussions being had, and you're probably sitting there going, does anybody believe that? Does anybody actually think these things are true? And I hope, if nothing else, you can know, yeah, your friends at the Alex Jones Network understand exactly how you feel. We feel it also. And the frustration is immeasurable. And while that might not be the most productive, you know, thing to talk about, I feel like we gotta figure out how to deal with this. Like how to stop being trapped in these rhetorical maelstroms that just spin us around and get us nowhere. And it seems like this is a ubiquitous, a constant feature of our political system. And to a certain extent, it was built this way on purpose, like especially the Senate. I mean, the whole idea was, well, we want endless debate because we don't want to change things too quickly. But when the debate is happening with somebody who doesn't even believe what they're saying and is just engaged again in this game, in this sport where they just have to get the ball over the line and whatever lies they have to tell and whatever, you know, misapprehension they have to pretend themselves to believe, like they'll do it because they're just trying to win the game. I'm not trying to win a game. I'm trying to speak the truth. I'm trying to pursue justice. I'm trying to live in a country that provides its citizen basic safety, like is laid out in the preamble to our Constitution. Like, that's my motive, and I'll go wherever that path leads. So if you can show me evidence that what I believe is wrong, do you think I'm going to keep insisting? No, I'm going to change my mind, because evidence of the truth is my guidepost, right? That's what you follow. And it's almost an impossible task to try to engage in the world that we live in if that is your sincere belief, because it seems like most of the people in charge don't have that belief, are not concerned about any of the things that a normal person would be concerned with, like telling the truth and providing safety. I mean, I think back to the Keith Ellison questioning in front of Congress when he was caught again, and we went over this ad nauseum at the time, but he was caught on video or on audio, secretly recorded with a microphone, collaborating with the Somali scammers. No uncertain terms, no vagueness. It was literally, if you support me, I will get the investigations canceled. Cut and dry, clear as day. What happens to him? He goes in front of Congress, he's presented with his evidence, and he smirks and he smiles and he says, what are you going to do about it? I'm getting away with it. And it's that attitude. It's that. And at the time, I remember saying, like, we don't need him to acknowledge it. You know, this is like, it's like you have somebody on camera jacking your stuff. You know, it's them. And you go, I know you stole this. They're just like, I didn't though. You don't have to convince them to admit it. You don't have to argue with them and reason with them and say, look, I have you on, because they don't care. They can get away with it. It's a flaw in our system that we need to solve, that we need to resolve, that we need to undo, because it works. Somehow it works. Is these people just refuse to acknowledge their own complicity in crimes, and so they don't get punished for it. And it's like, since when do we require the criminal to like present themselves as guilty? We know what they did. Let's punish them for it. We know the outcome of bills they want to pass. Let's not pass them. But it's like we can't do it. We can't get over it. So again, I'm going to hit the ground running on the other side with like real important monumental geopolitical news, including the fact that U.S. officials believed Israel was plotting to kill Iranian negotiators during negotiations. And I will add again, because they already did this multiple times. And America had to then warn Iran that our allies were trying to kill the negotiators, which we'll chuck this on the pile of reasons why Israel is our enemy. But it's not changing, but nothing about that is changing. So I'm going to get to that in a very strong way. I also want to touch on the new article from Whitney Webb about Polymarket and the way that that is being used in conjunction with other big tech operations to manipulate our reality. And we'll talk a little bit more about the DSA, but I want to go to this clip from Dale Partridge. This is clip number 3 here. And I think this is a very powerful. And again, like this is what people need to understand. Once again, the hardest part about our current situation is knowing that we have all of the human capital we could possibly need to set things right. We have all of the ability to do everything that could stop crime and end hunger. Like, we have the ability to do all of this, but we're prevented from actually accessing our own attributes and resources because a bunch of stupid Americans are just too gullible and just will keep believing the crap that they're sold and will never stand up for themselves. That's the frustrating part. Just stand up for yourself. Just believe in yourself. Just understand that you're the only one who will defend yourself and nobody else has your best interest in mind. And it doesn't make you a polite or good or respectable person to be a sucker and a fool who gets taken advantage of. Here's Dale Partridge.
White hospitality is killing the West. Assimilation only works when a nation's people strongly stigmatize foreigners. Think about the words foreign and strange. That's how non-natives should feel in our country. They are foreigners and they are strangers. We don't have to hate all the outsiders, but all outsiders must feel constant social pressure, even fear of a degree of discrimination, if they refuse to speak our language, adopt our customs, dress like us, and uphold our Christian heritage. Without that unrelenting pressure from the native people, outsiders will never assimilate. They will remain who they are, they will form parallel societies, and eventually they will impose their ways on us. In other words, our Christian hospitality, combined with today's tolerance, has not produced a melting pot because there's no heat. There's no pressure to conform. We foolishly opened our doors, our neighborhoods, and our nations to incompatible people with a smile. And now we're being replaced in our own homelands. This suicidal kindness has to end. It's effeminate and it's foolish. Loving the stranger does not mean you let him steal your home. Hospitality without discernment is not a virtue. It's national suicide.
Brilliant. Dale Partridge at Dale Partridge on X. Loving the stranger does not mean giving up your homelands. And I got no beef with what he just said. I'll just say, in terms of like the language that you use, I don't consider this kindness. Like, I get why he said it. He said, you know, suicidal kindness, or like this overabundant kindness, or suicidal empathy. Again, these are accurate things to call it, if that's what you want to call it. But I would just say that it's not kindness to be rocked. You're not being kind when you believe a lie. You're not even being kind to the liar. You're just being a sucker. You're just being a fool. You're just being an idiot. So it's not even really kindness that's compelling people. It's fear. They're not being kind. They're being fearful. They're being cowardly. They're being suckers and fools. They're not being kind. They're not being empathetic.
About to tell you a great truth, but like most great truths, everybody already knows it. But do you act on it? How you look on the outside is a reflection of what's happening on the inside. If you see your neighbor and they look all kind of green or stumbling around sweating, you're like, hey, Bob, are you sick? Yeah, I got the flu. If somebody's glowing and happy and looks super healthy, you ask them, hey, what are you doing to be so healthy? Ladies and gentlemen, bovine colostrum is known for decades by women and loved. And, you know, doctors push it because it works. And nutritionists for your hair, your skin, your nails. But that's the outside. Imagine what it's doing on the inside. That's where it has its most important effect, is in your guts, your immune system, and your organs. The Alex Jones Store's bovine colostrum is a private label of the top brand in the country. It's up to 4 times stronger than leading competitors, and it's the strongest out there and the highest rated. It gives you all of the key ingredients at the highest quality level that hasn't been pasteurized, so it hasn't been heated up to ruin the cofactors that are in it. But as quickly as I can, I want to just read you some of what is in this bovine colostrum
and announce to you that we don't just have the powder now. We have these naturally flavored, amazing grape gummies that are even more concentrated than the powder. A one-month supply, two gummies a day, and it doesn't just do your hair, nails, and skin. That's the outward thing it does. It's what it does to your gut and your organs. The gummy format also habituates you because it tastes so good to remember to take it, and kids love it as well. 600 milligrams per serving, every two gummies. A clinically meaningful dose, not a token amount, but a strong dose that will really give you great results. So get the powder and get the grape gummies right now at TheAlexJonesStore.com. Keep us on the air. Be healthier. Have a better life. A true 360 win. Thank you for your support. And the gummies are discounted for a limited time out of the gates. Again, at TheAlexJonesStore.com.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today. And now, our coming attractions.
I don't know about you, but I'm concerned with what's happening in this world. We have got to realize that we're being conditioned on a mass scale. Start challenging this corporate slave state.
Hey, look, it's Alex Jones!
Whoa! Hey, Alex!
We love you, Alex!
I'm concerned with the structure. I'm concerned with the systems of control. Those that control my life and those that seek to control it even more.
What a bunch of garbage, liberal, Democrat, conservative, Republican. It's all there to control you, two sides of the same coin.
Two management teams bidding for control, the CEO job of Slavery Incorporated.
Uh-oh, Antifa speed bump.
The truth is out there in front of you, but they lay out this buffet of lies. I'm sick of it, and I'm not going to take a bite out of it. Do you got me? We're going to stand up, and we're going to be human beings. We're going to get fired up about the real things, the things that matter, creativity, and the dynamic human spirit that refuses to submit.
I want to break down the new world.
That's what I want, and that's what you should want.
AlexJonesLive.com, because there is a war on for your mind. Reality starts here. AlexJonesLive.com. Share the link. Spread the word.
There you go. They tried to silence him. It only made him louder. Waking Life 2026 from Darren McBreen. Follow him at Media Rival on X. Great AI rendition of the classic film. It's amazing. I mean, most of those lines were from the movie. Right? I recognize most of them. It seems like one or two maybe were new, but what was that? No, some of those were. They weren't? I thought I recognized some of them. But he's driving around in Waking Life. I mean, when was that? 2003? Like, that was decades ago. And everything he was saying was just as pertinent then or now as it was then. And so much of what we're dealing with on a daily basis does go right back to this idea of they're training you, they're getting you used to it. They're shackling your mind in ways that really are hard to comprehend. I'll show you a video on the other side. It is the latest of a series. I can think of at least three videos of almost exactly the same thing happening in the UK, where a white guy is attacked by black people and the cops immediately rush in and arrest the white guy. And it's like, that's the type of thing where you look at it and you go, how would you even get to this point? How do you train people to do this type of thing? And you realize it's got to be literally decade upon decade of not just training in the official forces, but the societal manipulation that goes into this, to where, like, when a cop sees people fighting,
something goes off in their head where they go, get the white guy. Get that white guy. White guy, black guy, they see them both, and just like, you know, the white guy glows red in their view, and they just attack him. Again, let's get those other two videos too, because I want to play all three of these back to back. There's the other one, like last week, same thing. White guy gets attacked by a black guy. In that instance, the cops come in, grab the white guy while the fight is going on. So the white guy then has his hands pulled down. He's getting hit in the face by the black guy, who is the attacker. Then black guy walks away and the cops like sit on the white guy. And then of course you have Henry Novak as well. These guys are just lucky they weren't stabbed, because the cops probably put him in handcuffs and let him die on the curb like they did with Novak. I mean, this is the ultimate success of decades of programming.
Do not help fund the resistance. You sit comfortably. You consume. You watch. You wait for others to fight the battle for you. The dark side has you firmly in its grasp. Every day, you remain on the sidelines. My power grows stronger. Continue believing someone else will save the galaxy. It pleases me greatly.
Real time, uncensored, unstoppable. AlexJonesLive.com. Take a stand. Share the link.
Do you want to fight? You better believe you got one!
Nothing can stop me. The force lies within.
There is no escape from what you are becoming. Lay down your weapon or be destroyed.
Welcome back, folks. This is War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live on the Alex Jones Network. AlexJonesLive.com is the URL to share. Support us by going to thealexjonesstore.com. Get yourself one of these stylish hats, because I guess I'm just wearing for the rest of the show now. I guess that's happening. I mean, I wore the wig at first, and it made my hair messed up, so now I'm just wearing this cool stylish hat that you can get at thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison to let them know who sent you. Let's go now to this video. This is just the latest in a series of videos. Henry Novak, of course, being the most horrifying example, and an example in which the knife man, the attacker, used the pre-established racism of the UK police in order to kill his victim. He knew that if he said that the person racially abused him, that he'd get away with it. So that's exactly what he did. The police believed him. And again, at the time we said it, and now, you know, I'm even more convinced that police are likely literally trained in this way. Like specifically, like if you see a fight, go after the white guy. That sounds crazy that would be trained, but like the other option is that mindset, while not explicitly said, is just understood by the entire police force to a degree that it genuinely doesn't make any sense. So the video you're about to see, it's even worse than the one we showed last week. The one we showed last week was one guy fighting one guy. This is three black guys attack one white guy. The cop rushes up and slams the white guy into the wall. And you can tell the white guy, he's getting jumped. He's being attacked by a bunch of people. He doesn't even realize it's a cop that's now attacking him. Which is like part of the crazy part, right? Is like he's being attacked. Another person is attacking him like all at the same time. That person just happens to be a cop. Wait, what? So then he swings at the cop and like he kind of realizes halfway through the swing and he kind of pulls his punch a little bit. But they're likely going to charge him with like assaulting an officer. He has been charged with assaulting an officer. But like that alone is like, what type of situation are you being assaulted? And like, as it's going on, there's a cop also assaulting you. But if you fight back, you get thrown into prison. Like,
We got an update here. They charged him with assault on police officer. They described the assault of a lone white teenager as a group, as groups fighting. So let's watch the video. So here's the video. The white guy in the UK, you go out for a drink. You're walking through the streets of your own city. You get jumped by a bunch of dudes. Before you know it, you're under arrest and going to spend the next couple of years in jail because the cops joined in on the gang assault on you and you didn't know instantly. What? Here's the video.
What the f- I'm trying to go home, bro.
What? Are you home straight?
Please, I'm trying to go home, bro.
Wow, so this is the end. Let's back it up to the beginning. So he's just standing there. Oh, he gets slammed to the ground by that guy, punched by that guy, and then slammed to the ground by the cop. Why would she? So she saw everything. So back it up. We got to go back to the beginning. So I want to watch this almost in slow. So clearly the cops are watching this happen. They're right there. They see this guy. They see him slammed to the ground. That guy gets punched. Why did the cops go after that guy? What would be the justification? What the hell? There's no even possibility that this guy didn't even throw a punch. He gets slammed to the ground. As he's getting up, he gets punched in the back. Thank God that guy didn't have a knife. Why would the cops arrest this guy? I was thinking this was more like the other clip where, like, at least the guys are fighting. I hadn't watched it, you know, that closely, this beginning part yet. But no, it's clear on rewatch. The dude didn't even throw a punch, didn't even defend himself. So the cop sees this kid get, and then immediately she's slamming him to the wall. This is what I mean. How do you get to this point? What type of reaction is that? Be aware of footage showing the arrest of a man after a disorder on Broad Street at 1:30 a.m. on June 21st. Officers found a group of men fighting. As the incident was dealt with, an officer was punched. The man was arrested and charged with assaulting a police officer. The community note, this description is false. One man was surrounded by multiple others. The man was assaulted and thrown to the ground. While on the ground, he was punched in the head. While getting up, police officer threw him against the wall while his assailants were allowed to go free. This is what I mean. Like, yeah, and this is the official Birmingham police statement. Like, to me, this is, like, weirdly, almost less understandable than the Henry Novak case. Because the Henry Novak case, they lied to the cops when they called them. So the cops show up thinking they're, you know, going to, police arrested the teen who was knocked down while the attackers fled. The video has X demanding answers. Well, that's why we gotta, you know, censor X. This is why we have to censor X. I mean, without X causing problems, this would be a very simple matter of throwing that kid in jail for years and silencing any media outlet that dared to speak about it. Oh yeah, and then they're like shoving him in the car, cursing at him, and he's backward. He's like, they're not even shoving him in the right way. He's like facing the wrong way, and they're like shoving him in, bashing his head against. And by the way, there's more videos of this. They're like cursing the kid out. She calls him an effing D. They're like, you get in the car, you effing D. And it's like, he didn't do anything wrong. He got assaulted. So like it's almost less understandable than the Henry Novak. The Henry Novak case, from the cop's perspective, they get a call, this kid was racist, they show up. Like, I'm not defending it, but like, it's actually more understandable that they were lied to, that, you know, the people who did the assaulting were BSing him. But in this one, the cop sees the assault, sees a guy get clotheslined to the ground, punched in the back of the head. He never throws a punch, never raises his hand. And as he's standing up, the cop slams him into the wall. You tell me what was going through her mind. You tell me, you know, what sort of logic was involved here. It genuinely is beyond explanation. Yeah, and 8 more cops show up. Half of them tiny women. Here's the other one. Let's go. Let's go to this video. This is the one we played last week. Very, very, very similar situation. If we can back it up to the beginning, we can see once again, same type of thing, but almost less egregious because again, you know, these are two guys fighting, but you'll see the black guy starts the fight. The white guy's backing away, trying to back up, trying to defend himself. The cops run up. In this case, they grab the white guy while the fight is going on. And so the black guy gets a free punch while the white guy's hands are pinned to his sides. And the black guy is still allowed to continue punching. So there, the black guy's attacked the white guy, punches him in the face. The cop runs up, grabs the white guy's arms. Black guy gets one slug in the face, cuts the guy's face open. Black guy's never even, you know, one guy puts a hand on him. But the white guy, again, still, he's just like, I didn't do anything. I'm being attacked. The cops slam him to the ground, sit on him. Two more cops come over, slam his hands to the ground. I bet this guy was charged with assaulting an officer as well. And both times, both white guys are just like, what is going on? What did I do? I'm just trying to go home. They aren't starting fights. They aren't even throwing punches in some cases. The cops are, they see it all happen and yet still attack the white guy and arrest him. You tell me what's going on here. This is an update from Birmingham Police. This incident has been reviewed and we have no concerns over the officer's action and we are satisfied that they were reasonable and proportionate to the circumstances. We ask that footage is not further shared to allow the legal, to allow the legal process to take its course. Well, I think the people of Birmingham should burn the police station down. Tell you what, I would never call for violence, but my immediate thought is violence, is extreme violence against this. This is what I mean. I'm not interested in arguing about it. We saw it on video. I don't care what they say. I don't care how they try to justify it. They're going to keep doing this. Like they aren't even guilty. Like they aren't even sad. They aren't even shamed about this. They approve of what the officer did. They watched the same video we just watched and said the officer acted exactly as they should act. I think white British people need to rise up in arms and overthrow their government. I think they need to all get weapons and kill their enemies that are occupying their homeland. Is that too extreme? Am I being too extreme right now? I don't know. I just put on this hat. Suddenly I want cannon fire. I want to hear cannon fire. I'm open to suggestions. The problem is, I've thought through this. I've gamed this out. I've pursued every possibility. And, yeah, there's no way to reverse this. You tell me, again, I'm open to suggestions. You tell me, what do you do to get the UK back on track when multiple times a week, it seems at this point, we are getting videos of white people in Britain being viciously assaulted by foreigners and the police immediately arresting the white person, assaulting the white person, and then throwing the white person in jail when they're the victim of the crime? How do you think we get out of this? How do you think you get back on track? Because I could offer some possible ways, and I think as soon as I mention them, you will understand how utterly impossible it is. For example, you could point out to the officers who did it, you may have been caught up in the moment, but reviewing the video, it is very clear that you just assaulted a victim of a crime. We just read how that didn't work because they don't care. So what do you do? Like, what do you do when you can show video evidence that they did something wrong and they don't admit it, they don't acknowledge it, and then they tell you the problem is people are sharing the video and you need to censor the internet so that video can't be shared? What do you do? I think you take the message, you get the message, you receive the signal, talking is not going to work anymore. And these people have made it impossible for us to get back on track. And, you know, we played the video yesterday of the Indian guy just being like, yeah, we're going to burn it down. It's all going to be trash. It's all going to be, you know, nothing. And like, that seems to be the motivation. It genuinely seems to be just the mission to just destroy everything on purpose, by design. And when you realize that's the case, because there's no alternative, there's just not, right? A black man who got beaten by men for exposing himself in public place was saved by a white woman. This will be the image of the fall of our civilization. White privileged women importing and supporting the threat because they feel. Yeah, this was a story in Italy. Black guy at a beach, completely naked. He drops his drawers and is standing there masturbating in public in full view of everybody. The Italian men go up and start beating him. Or, well, they go up and tell him to stop, and he won't, and they start fighting. And then a woman runs up and is just like, leave him alone. Leave him alone. He's just masturbating to children. He's just pulling out his penis on a public beach and showing it to children. Leave him alone. I say, do something else. I say the opposite. Now, I just very blatantly called for revolutionary violence in the UK, so if I'm not willing to say what I actually think should happen to the black guy on the Italian beach, I think you can understand it's a hell of a lot worse than calling for violence. It's like, I'm communicating to you telepathically now what must be done. You guys heard that, right? Was that in my brain? That may have been in my brain. Accurate, but very accurate. Yeah, this is kind of a good example of what I'm talking about. We're clearly not as far down the road, down the line as Europe is. Well, let's go to 26 here, clip 26. Atlanta, the city of Atlanta, spent $130 million building glass walls to stop fare evasion on their subway system. Let's see how that worked. Ah, well, it worked pretty well. Looks like we're up. Never mind. Oh, well, there you go. Well, there you go. Problem solved. That's a woman with a can-do attitude. Hey. I mean, sure, you know, what does it cost? A dollar? Yeah. What does it cost? A dollar to get on the train in Atlanta? She can't do it. She would rather bodily throw herself through glass than pay a dollar. Like, this is kind of what I mean. It's like, you know, what do you do when all of the traditional methods of maintaining order in a civilization, you just aren't allowed to do because it hurts the feelings of the people abusing you. When it hurts the feelings of third world migrants that got here yesterday and are angry because they haven't found a woman to rape yet, like, and we have to put their feelings above everybody else, what do you do when the very simple, obvious solutions that have maintained civilization through all of time are suddenly deemed off limits by a bunch of psychopath weirdo idiots? What do? You try to come up with novel ways of enforcing it that don't seem like they're enforcing because we don't want to be mean, but they are stealing our stuff. So can we put up glass walls? They'll look fancy. They'll look fancy and they'll look nice and that'll work, right? It's like, no. These are feral people. They're feral. Okay. This isn't effective. This doesn't work. This is not how you solve these problems. We don't solve these problems by talking about it with the people that are screwing us over. We don't solve problems of thievery by hiding the merchandise behind plexiglass walls. These are all novel, newly introduced concepts that only have to exist because the obvious, simple, effective solution is deemed off limits. We have to stop listening to anybody who says that we can't do the necessary things to put ourselves back on the right track. If you have a problem with fare evaders, you need to arrest the fare evaders.
the perfect world, the ideal civilization, which existed for a very long time in this country and Europe, is a world where there are no barriers, there are no locks on doors, there are no, not because there is a universal panopticon surveillance system who's going to punish anybody for stepping out of line, but because you have intelligent, thoughtful, good-hearted people running around. We have replaced a population of decent, respectable, God-fearing, intelligent people with people from the third world. And I don't even blame, I mean, in a lot of cases, it's literally not their fault. They have an IQ of 70. It's really not their fault. It's almost cruel to expect them to be able to deal with modern American civilization. They don't have the capacity. So why did we import them by the millions? That's my question. I don't hate them. I want them to do well. I just don't want to destroy my civilization because they're incapable of living in it. Do you see what I mean? And this goes for everybody. Why are we listening to them? Why do we change ourselves to comport with them? Everything that we've talked about today is like this. You don't like the people who are anti-Semitic. You don't get to destroy the First Amendment. You have to leave. You have to go home. You're incompatible with us. And this is our home. So you leave. That's how this should work. If you can't pay $2 to get on the Atlanta subway system, you should be thrown in front of the subway car. Sorry, I mean, you should be sent back home. Why do we keep changing our civilization to comport with people who hate our civilization and are incapable of upholding it? It really is infuriating. This story we'll continue to cover on the other side, and we are going to talk about Israel. I don't care what Alex says. I'm going to break the chains. I'm going to rip off the muzzle. I'm going to talk about Israel. You know what? Enough is enough. I've held my tongue for too long. I'm going to do it. I'm going to talk about Israel. U.S. officials believed Israel was plotting to kill Iranian negotiators. New York Times. I'm always having to do with the New York Times. Edit New York Times in real time. Again. I'll add again, because they already did this multiple times. U.S. officials believed that Israel might have been plotting to kill Iran's top negotiators while Washington was engaged with Tehran in delicate talks this spring to reach an interim peace deal, according to the current and former American officials. Killing senior Iranian leaders has been a part of Israel's strategy from the start of the war, but American concerns about targeting two particular Iranian officials, Abbas Araghchi, Iran's foreign minister, and Mohammad Bagher Ghalibaf, the president of the parliament, spiked during delicate ceasefire negotiations that began in April. Fearful that an Israeli assassination effort would doom the negotiations, the United States, according to some of the officials, went so far as to ask other countries in the region to warn Iran about the possibility that Israel could target two officials. Oh, I'm sure they were unaware. I'm sure. Hello, Iran. This is Qatar. Do you know Israel is trying to kill you? Yeah, we know. No, we're pretty sure they are, for sure. Not something we need to... This is another one of these things. You know, do I need to say it? Do I need to explain any of this? Like, this is one of these things, and I feel like there's a lot of this. Happens with my family a lot now, where, like, something will happen on the news or whatever, and my family just, like, turns and looks at me, and I'm just like, yeah. Like, this is kind of how I feel, where it's just like, you just read this, and it's just like, have we not been telling you? Have we not been telling you that they've been doing this the entire time? Have we not made this a central core of our, you know, it's just one of these things where, you know, if you're ever talking to people that are like, Israel's our friend, it's just like, are they though? Are they though? They're not! They're our enemy! For the love of God.
Do not get this ad. Do not support the broadcast. Support Mondami.
Hello, Alex.
Have you told people what you got caught doing?
I returned the hat, sir. I did.
Bigley only sent us two of these. I stole one. I've been wearing it. I wore it today, and I said, Harrison, I noticed there was a hat in here. It's missing. I said, did you take it? And Harrison said, yes, sir, I cannot lie. That's how coveted these are at the AlexJonesStore.com. That you may have it. Actually, I have Bigley sending us more. I designed, you like it.
I love it.
No, actually,
and in fact,
everybody takes the stuff they should have it after we've shown it. But the point is, this is very coveted.
It's
and
very
it does
cool.
fund the operation. I just want you to tell a story about your covetedness. This is, I present it to you.
I really did. Thank you very much.
You deserve it. You didn't actually steal it.
Well, thank you.
But I did. The point is, I knew when it was gone, you had to have it.
I did
and
check.
You have to have it and fund our operation if you want us to expand. We love you.
I did check. I made sure there were two because I didn't want to take the only one.
But see, I wanted one.
Yeah, well, there you go. Well,
I had to steal one.
And actually, as soon as I got home, my son saw it and was like, are those guns on that hat? I said, yeah. So now
I've already told Bigley, mail us more.
All right. Well, folks. You can be like us.
I just came in to be about this. Wasn't planned. I'm being silly. You're kicking ass, by the way.
Thank you.
There's some badass 250th anniversary stuff. I said it's all limited edition. Some of this stuff's too good. It's not limited edition.
It'll last forever. But look.
I don't know why everybody loves it. I wore that out in public this week. I got like 10 comments.
It is a very cool hat. I don't know what it is either. It's classic. It's simple. Yeah, very simple. Got the two musket design. It's very high quality. The stitching is real. It's not just like a patch. That's all you can actually see here. If the crew can go to dot cam.
I apologize. No, please.
I get to talk more about this hat. You can actually see. I mean, you can see the stitching on the other side. It's not just a patch on top.
You want your son wants that?
He took it. Yeah. My five-year-old is wearing it as we speak.
That's like an hat out of that though.
It's very cool. It's a very cool hat. And look, folks. You're going to be the stylish person at the 4th of July barbecue. That's all I'm saying. I want to see these hats seared with fireworks because of irresponsible celebration during July 4th. But I wasn't lying, folks. I really did take that. I didn't do it surreptitiously, though. On Friday afternoon, I picked the hat off the shelf and I looked around. And I said, okay, there's still a hat there, so I'm not taking the last one. And I left with it on my head.
I wasn't secretive. I just caught you, American. No, you were like.
Exactly.
Mine! Caught your head. Do not get this hat. Do not support the broadcast. Support Mondami.
Support Mondami, that's right. Get the hat, folks. You can get the hat today. I think it's on discount, even though we could sell out of this thing without giving any discount at full price. And like I said, folks, I mean, pretty much any store you go in these days, whether it's a little local, you know, kitsch store, or you go in Walmart or Target or wherever, they almost all have a big display with their merchandise for America's 250th. They're doing it because they think they can make some money off you. We're doing it because this is our driving force. This is our life. This is what we've dedicated ourselves to. The 250th anniversary to us is not just, you know, oh, let's rotate out the seasonal merchandise, you know, get rid of the cool stuff, move in the patriotic stuff. No, this is our lifeblood. This is what we truly believe. This is who we are. And if it's who you are too, you can support us by going to thealexjonesstore.com. And it depends on where you live, but you may still be able to get those delivered by July 4th so you can have it in time for the big 250th celebration.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is War Room Live. Story from New York Times. U.S. officials believed Israel was plotting to kill Iranian negotiators. They say the war began on February 28th with an Israeli strike that killed the Supreme Leader Khamenei and other top officials based in part on U.S. intelligence. When U.S. strikes focused on Iran's navy and missile forces, Israel prioritized the leadership in the early phase of the war, intent on killing as many high-ranking officials as it could. That included killing potentially more pragmatic leaders that the Trump administration had hoped to negotiate with, such as Ali Larijani,
Iran's top national security official, and Kamal Karazi, a former Iranian foreign minister. Both men were involved in the negotiations with the U.S. when they were killed in Israeli airstrikes. The Trump administration's suspicions about the possible Israeli plot to kill the top two negotiators show how the U.S. and Israeli war aims, which were close to the very beginning of the war, quickly diverged radically. And while the United States wanted a peace agreement, Israel had been skeptical from the initial cessation of hostilities in April. The initial two-week ceasefire in April was met with grudging Israeli official support and broad public concern in Israel that the United States was ending the war too early. Rather than being driven from power, the theocratic government of Iran had become even more hardline, and Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps had only consolidated its control over the country. Okay, so Israel got us into the war, and then Israel killed the negotiators we were working with to try to end the war early on. Then apparently even now, the negotiators that we're dealing with were under threat of assassination from Israel. And the only point could possibly be to keep America in the war, to continue the cost to us, and if possible, to expand our involvement to boots on the ground, because that's what they need to achieve their ultimate war aims. And I kind of feel like this, how I feel about censorship, where it's like, I think it's completely outrageous and, you know, suicidal. It's just retarded to like be killing the people you negotiate with. But it's like, if that's the situation that we're in, then we should be killing the Israelis. Like, it's kind of like, if it's good for you, then, you know, if it's good for them, then it's good for you kind of thing. It's like, as soon as you start doing this, and the thing is, I've been talking a lot about this. I've been thinking and reading a lot about this because I'm doing a multi-part series right now with Off Limits News on NXR Studios. You can find it on YouTube. Just search Off Limits News or NXR Studios, Harrison Smith, about Rise and Kill First, a book that describes the history of the targeted killing program in Israel and that, you know, has become and really from the beginning was like their primary method of geopolitical involvement, killing everybody, killing absolutely everybody. And the first episode's already out. The next episode will be coming out tomorrow, but I thought I'd give you a little preview with like just a couple pieces of information you might find interesting about the formation and methods of Israel's targeted killing. The first thing you need to understand is that the Foundation of Israel, sponsored by the Rothschilds, originally started in the late 1800s, early 1900s, and the primary operatives carrying out attacks against Arabs or assassinating foreigners that were against Zionism, they were all socialist revolutionaries who had carried out assassins and guerrilla warfare against the Tsarist forces in Russia. When they lost that and the revolution didn't pop off at that time, they all fled to Israel and they brought their tactics with them. Murder, guerrilla warfare, assault. And the attitude from them was, if you cross us, you die. And time again, you know, in the book is written from an Israeli perspective, so they try to justify it. But a lot of people they kill were not an existential threat to them, they were inconvenient. There was a Dutch rabbi named Dejan, J-A-A-N. He was a very devout Orthodox rabbi who happened to be anti-Zionist in the early 1900s before Israel existed. And so they murdered him. Okay? He was a Jewish person. He was ultra-religious. He actually lived in Palestine, I believe. But he was against their Zionist project, so they murdered him. Like, that's the way they dealt with people. And often, it was actually almost always presented as, you know, these people are Nazis. They want to or have tried to kill us all before. Therefore, they deserve death. We ascribe to them the death penalty. And it goes over this long history. The first episode gets into it extensively about this organization called Gamul that was Within the British Army, there was something called the Jewish Brigade, and basically the civilian leadership in Israel convinced the British Army to bring on 38,000 Jewish soldiers in this Jewish Brigade. And within that brigade was a secret cabal called Gamul that was using their access as British officers in British uniform to go find German POWs that were in British apprehension to torture and kill them, just using the British Army as a vessel through which to exact revenge against these, you know, random Germans who had lost the war a few years earlier. And in that, you know, they didn't prove that the Germans were gas chamber operators. In fact, they knew in many cases they were just low-level sort of Nazi Party functionaries or just like government bureaucrat employees, but they would kill them anyway. And this is justified in the minds of the assassins with the phrase, rise and kill first. These people are trying to kill you. You can rise and kill them. The thing is, the people doing the killing themselves have long-term plans to take over the land of Israel, drive everybody out, and kill anybody who resists. Now, they didn't admit that. They didn't publicize that. But that was the case. And so it seems to me like if you were to take their own moral framework and apply it to themselves, then literally the British, the German, the Arabs, and the Palestinians in Palestine, they had every right to murder all of the, or, you know, early arrivals of the first or second Aliyah. Because according to their framework is, if you're going to kill me or if you're going to take my stuff, like in one story in Rise and Kill First, I mean, that's the way they justify it. They go, this guy was a Nazi and he was in charge. You stole the Jewish people's stuff in Germany. You took it to yourself. And that same guy in 1917 had himself been driven out of Palestine by the British when the World War I broke out. And it's just one of these things where it's just like, okay, is that the bar? Is that the barrier? If somebody takes your stuff, you get to kill them. If somebody drives you out of your homeland, you get to kill them. Because if that's the case, then you all deserve death. And it would be absolutely justified. So I'm sick of this double standard or this, like, you know, oh, you know, well, we're just innocent poor refugees and we're being attacked by the Arabs. Meanwhile, they're holding these secret meetings that are like, we are going to kill all of them. They have these massive weapons caches. Like, it's all just deception and lies. But that core socialist revolutionaries from Eastern Europe that move to Israel, start living on kibbutzes funded by the Rothschilds, they start killing people. They start killing Arabs. They start killing British mandate operatives, the King David Hotel explosion, the Levon affair, you know, all these things happen before Israel is a state. It's just a group of random guys. It's just a group of dudes from Eastern Europe who first try to take over Russia. You know, again, it's not like they have this like lifelong dedication to religious Zionism where they're motivated by a sense of, you know, religious adherence to go, you know, settle the Holy Land. No, they tried to take over Russia first. It failed. So then they went to Israel to take that over. Like, they're just brutal communist terrorists. That's who they were. That's who they are to this day. That core of just mobsters, gangsters, assassins, killers, operating in secret, murdering anybody who opposes them, forcefully taking over things that don't belong to them. That was the core and remained the core of Bar Gyomora, the first, you know, Jewish militia, non-state terrorist group in the Middle East. That became Hashomer, that became Haganah, that became the IDF, Shin Bet, all this other stuff. But it was always the same thing. It was always just a group of these couple of guys, couple dozen guys at the most, who were just using murder to get their way. And they always got cover politically and diplomatically from Zionists in European states and, you know, all over the world who would always swoop in and say, well, you know, we're not with them. We're not with the terrorists. But, you know, you can't let all of Zionism fall just because these guys, right? So you always need both of these sides. You always need the radical, you know, it's a classic meme There's a comic that goes around a lot where it's like radical Muslim and it's like, do what I want or I'll kill you. Moderate Muslim, do what I want or he'll kill you. Right? That's sort of how it works. And it works with the Jews in Israel as well. But all this is to build up the idea that just effectively, functionally, in reality, the state of Israel for 50 years before it was actually codified in the UN was not a state. It was a gang of murderers. It was a cabal of warmongering psychopath terrorists that literally invented terrorism as a concept in those early days. Okay. So the original core militia of psychopaths goes through a couple iterations, the Irgun breaks off, the Lehi breaks off, then the official Haganah, they get mad at those guys and say, you're not allowed to operate anymore. And then like a year later, they bring all those guys back and create a new, you know, organization that employs all of them and all of their, you know, worst attributes. It's just this little core of murderers. Now, what does this have to do with what's going on today? Well, it still exists today. It still operates today. They still run on the same strategies as they did back then, and they've never been effective ever in their entire history. And we can go through some of it, but this is from like chapter 4 or 5 of the book when they're talking about actually creating the organizations that exist now. So this is Ben Gurion, the first prime minister of Israel. Ben Gurion kept all of the agencies under his direct control. The Mossad and Shin Bet were under him in his capacity as prime minister, and military intelligence fell under his purview because he was also minister of defense. It was an enormous concentration of covert and political power. Yet from the beginning, it was kept officially hidden from the Israeli Republic. From the Israeli public, rather. Ben-Gurion forbade anybody from acknowledging, let alone revealing, that this sprawling web of official institutions even existed. In fact, mentioning the name Shin Bet or Mossad was publicly prohibited until the 1960s. Because their existence could not be acknowledged, Ben-Gurion prevented the creation of a legal basis for those same agencies' operations. No law laid out their goals, roles, mission, powers, or budgets in relation between them. In other words, Israeli intelligence from the outset occupied a shadow realm, one adjacent to, yet separate from, the country's democratic institutions. The activities of the intelligence community, most of it Shin Bet and Mossad under the direct command of the prime minister, took place without any effective supervision by Israel's parliament, the Knesset, or any other independent external body. In this shadow realm, quote-unquote state security was used to justify a large number of actions and operations that, in the visible world, would have been subject to criminal prosecution and long prison terms, constant surveillance of citizens because of their ethnic or political affiliations, interrogation methods that included prolonged detention without judicial sanction and torture, perjury in the courts, and concealment of the truth from counsel and judges. Do you understand
what they're saying?
Do you understand what they're saying right there? That this little core of psychotic murderers that created a gang that was then codified into the IDF, the Mossad, Shin Bet, that these continued to carry out assassinations, continued to carry out missions, but were never actually codified into the Israeli government system. So they weren't like, you think of it as like the state intelligence of a state. But it's not that. It's still just an independent cabal of murderers and assassins. They don't have the protection of, you know, state authority. They shouldn't, at least. Officially, they didn't. But they were still murdering people. They just got away with it. You know, when our government kills somebody, ideally, there's a review process. There's legitimacy to the, you know, exercise of deadly force that our government monopolizes to itself because it justifies that monopoly of force with the fact that it should be and legally only ever is applied when appropriate and with oversight from civilians. Mossad didn't have oversight from civilians. Shin Bet, they weren't even allowed to admit that it existed officially. So there was no law saying, you know, in the United States, we had there was a law that created the CIA. The Congress passed it and controlled its purse strings. That didn't happen in Israel. So when I say there's like a very small cabal of psychopathic murderers that run the world, like they're not a government. They're not official. They're a mafia. And they kill people and they torture people and they blow up buildings. And they do it for themselves, for their own reasons, to their own ends. It's not democratically justified. It's not, that's all it is. It's just a group of murders. That's it. And Benjamin Netanyahu was a key member of this. Ehud Barak was a key member of this. Ben Gurion was a key member of this. Ben Zvi was a key member of this. Ariel Sharon was like the biggest factor in any of this. Menachem Begin, or however the hell you say his name, was a big part of it. Like every major prime minister in Israel's history has started as a member of this unofficial, unaligned, independent cabal of murderers. And by the way, in this book, there's multiple stories where they do some egregious murder. They get caught doing it. There's going to be an investigation. And the intelligence agencies go to the prime minister, whoever it is at the time, and they say, "Prime Minister, do we want people to know who you've killed? If you're going to investigate this thing where we killed these Palestinians, do you want your operations to be exposed? Because we've got them. We've got all the evidence of them." And so, of course, it gets shut down. So that's the way this works. People in positions of power first have to be indoctrinated into the program where they commit crime. They participate in crimes against humanity or other outrages. And so then if they ever want to actually grow a heart and undo some of the damage that they've done, they won't be able to because they'll be blackmailed with the actions that they took part in. And then you call it an intelligence agency and you give it the facsimile of legitimate authority. But it goes on. Mossad's charter, which was written by Harel, was equally broad and ambitious. The organization's purpose, according to its official orders, was a secret collection of information, strategic, political, operational, outside the country's borders, carrying out special operations outside Israel's borders, thwarting the development and acquisition of unconventional weapons by hostile states, preventing the terror attacks against Israel and Jewish targets outside of Israel, development and maintenance of intelligence and political ties with countries that do not maintain diplomatic relationships with Israel, bringing to Israel Jews from countries that refuse to allow them to leave, and creating a framework for the defense of the Jews still in these countries. In other words, it was charged not only with protecting Israel and its citizens, but also standing as a sentinel for world Jewry. So put these two things together. So what is Mossad? What is this targeted killing program that became a state intelligence agency? According to the people that founded it, according to this book written by an Israeli journalist using firsthand Mossad sources, according to them, Mossad is, at least for a while, was not an official expose, or it wasn't an official outlet of the Israeli army. It was a cabal of independent, non-state aligned murderers, and they were not charged with defending strictly the security of Israel. They were charged with being the enforcement arm of Jews worldwide. So when you talk about Mossad or you talk about Israeli intelligence, you're not talking about a corollary to the CIA, a state intelligence agency whose job is contained to the well-being of the nation that it serves, ostensibly. And we know how that goes. But what this is a non-aligned group of killers who are going to murder anybody they perceive as a threat to the Jewish people anywhere and everywhere. That's an entirely different thing. That's an ethnic mafia. That's all that is. That is literally no better or worse than the Cosa Nostra. It's no different. It's just treated as if it's legitimate and authoritative. It's just treated with legitimacy by, you know, people who are aligned with it in our country and countries all over the world. But when you read stories about, you know, Israel wanting to, you know, kill the Iranian leadership, this is the only thing they know how to do,
and it's never been necessary, and it's never even really been that effective. I go through in the episode that comes out yesterday, or tomorrow, rather, I go through the first couple of chapters of the book. Just about every single attempt they make fails at least once. They never suffer any consequences from it, because they always have diplomatic cover to get away with it. And it just, at a certain point, like we gotta just stop treating Israel like it's a normal nation. It's not. It's not even really a nation in like a real way. Like it is a headquarters. That might be a good way of thinking about it. It's a parasitic state, but it's not really like a state. It's like a headquarters. It's like a home base. But it's not like a state. It's not like a nation. It's not like the people in that nation are of that nation, and that nation operates on that. It is an international operation with a headquarters in Israel. I think that matters. I think that matters a lot. I think it matters a lot that it's this cabal of psychotic murderers that can't help but kill everybody all the time. Oh, and by the way, even when they succeed, even when it goes perfectly and they get exactly who they wanted to get and nobody else, which almost never happens. They're just constantly killing innocent people all over the place. It's genuinely, it's crazy. It's crazy how many people they kill all the time and have forever. Where was I going with that? What was I saying? I was getting distracted by my memory of all of the stories of all of the murder going on constantly everywhere. But even when they succeed, even when they get their guy and nobody else, there's always a backlash. Like almost every single time they successfully kill somebody, they're euphoric. They literally have parties. They're like, there's recounting, like they kill a guy and they're like having a big party with the prime minister and all the Knesset is there toasting champagne. And then like the next sentence will be like, but actually it had really devastating diplomatic consequences. And instead of stopping the suicide bombers, they actually ramped up 10 times following that. So it's like, But they never learn. They never change their tactics. They never suffer any real tangible consequences that make them change their mind. Time and time again, they murder the people that are helping them. They murder the people that they need to succeed in whatever they're doing. Or they murder the British and piss the British off. Or they murder the guy who's doing the suicide bombings and even more suicide bombers come. Or they try to kill somebody and they end up killing his entire family and he's not even at home. And they never suffer consequences. Or they send a hit team to Norway and they murder a Moroccan neighbor, waiter in front of his pregnant girlfriend and spend 6 months in jail before getting let out. So they never actually suffer the consequences, but they also never pay the price either. They never pay the price for murdering people. They never pay the price for failing. And they never learn their lesson when they succeed and everything just gets worse. They just keep murdering people. It's like they have a mindset of just like, we just haven't murdered enough people. If only we can murder these people, then everything will be fixed. So I guess they'll need to murder Iraqi, and then they'll need to murder the Pakistani negotiators. Then they'll need to murder the Qatari negotiators. Then they'll probably need to murder Trump and his family. Then they'll need to murder J.D. Vance. And like at the end of it, they'll be sitting there covered in blood, just going like, Where's all the anti-Semitism coming from? Why are all these words? We have so much more killing to do. I think at a certain point, we just got to recognize. We have to just like, we know who our enemies are. We know who our enemies are.
Have the 250th birthday limited edition run of awesome designs for this July 4th. 2026 coming up, and they're now available to ship to you as of today, Monday, June 15th, 2026, and they'll be available only through July. They're limited edition, and then that's it. And they fundraise for the broadcast. But I got to say, I'm very impressed with the designs that Bigley came up with. I was heavily involved in this, and the concepts like Praise the Lord and Pass the Ammunition, with the rattlesnake and the AR-15, Liberty or Death, 1776 to 2026. That is a really nice shirt. I designed this one, very simple. America, 250 years strong. And these are just very clean, Americana, high-quality fabric, very comfortable. Destroying Tyranny since 1776. I did that concept. These are very, very clean.
I'm proud of these. I think these are shirts everybody would want to wear. I would certainly want to wear these. America, ride fast, live free. Just a classic Betsy Ross flag. 1776 free. They came up with that. I think that's pretty cool. Defund the deep state. That's pretty cool. I like that really clean one right there. 1776, 250 years of freedom. They designed that. Very clean, very nice. So you want nice, clean, patriotic apparel that, you know, won't get you stabbed by a liberal, but other patriots will know who you are. You're going to promote liberty and kind of identify who you are. It's fun to wear these shirts, I can tell you that right now. You kind of choose your own adventure. You wear an Alex Jones shirt, then you're really going to meet a lot of cool people, but you also might get a bottle smashed over your head. So, hundreds and hundreds of great designs from the Gulf of America to you name it. That's a good-looking shirt right there at thealexjonesstore.com.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.